have loved you anyway.
If you had just looked once or twice
and gone upon your quiet way,
stay safe.
Hey everybody, happy holidays, and welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because it is our annual holiday episode, which means I'm joined for this very special holiday episode, as always, by my holiday buddy, Adam Risky. Hey, Adam.
Happy holidays, Patrick, happy holidays, F This Movie listeners.
Yay, thanks for being here and for doing this show. This is one of my favorite shows to do every year.
Yep, same here. I'm very much looking forward to closing out the trilogy of Travolta Cage shows.
I doubt it. I say we keep going.
So, but I have a subtitle for this episode.
Okay, let's
hear
it. Let's hear it.
The 2021 holiday show: Return of the Kings.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like it. We're doing 12 days of Travolta Cage Christmas.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
We're talking 12 Travolta Cage movies.
Yes. Yeah. And as I rewatched all these, this is the big summation. Nicolas Cage or John Travolta should be in every movie.
I agree with you. Yeah. I would enjoy watching every movie if one or both was in it.
Yes. Like they feel like real movies, which is nice. And maybe peppering them into some of Hollywood's latest would at least make you and I happy, if nobody else.
Yeah. Perhaps.
Name one holiday movie from this year that you would put Nicolas Cage in and one you would put John Travolta in.
Cage goes in Home Sweet Home Alone.
Okay.
As the kid.
I like it.
And Travolta goes in...
So would Cage just be playing...
Does it have to be a holiday movie or just like a movie that's out now?
Oh, just a movie that's out
now. Oh, I misunderstood the question. Oh,
okay. Well, we can go back. I do have a follow-up question, though, to your Cage's, you know, the little kid in Home Alone.
Yeah.
Is he like a grown man and his parents are just elderly? Or is it...
No, I think he should be playing a child.
Like Clifford situation?
Yeah, exactly. Like a Clifford situation.
I would definitely, definitely VOD that.
I would let Cage or Travolta play the Bradley Cooper part in Licorice Pizza.
Yeah, I could see that. Although I do have a thought about John Travolta after watching six of his movies in a row.
Okay.
I think that he's better when he's not the biggest performance in the movie. I think if there's somebody else who's a little bit bigger than him, it sort of helps him stay on the rails a little bit. Because there's a couple of movies that we've got here to talk about where he is the biggest thing in the movie, performance-wise, and I don't know if it's a good idea all the time.
I think I know which ones you're talking about, but I'm excited to hear this theory.
Yeah.
In further detail... I'm very excited for this episode. Before we get into our holiday episode and our Spotlight Showcase movie, Adam, have you seen anything good lately?
I just took a bite of a McDonald's holiday pie. So
it's the holiday show.
While I'm swallowing,
holiday
listen to
pie.
Our holiday buddy Gizmo.
Thanks, Giz.
He wants to see Sing 2. That's what he just said.
He wants to hear the new U2 song.
Is there a new U2 song in Sing 2?
Yeah, my kids have seen it like twice. I haven't seen it at all.
The movie?
Yeah.
Oh, because they did that sneak preview thing?
We got a screener for it. It's like a digital screener, so they've watched it twice. I have watched
it
zero times.
Odd in all the marketing I've seen for it, they're like never singing. They're always like fighting with swords or like driving sports cars. And I'm just like, I thought this was about like American Idol. basically.
The first one was, right? That's my memory. I didn't see the first one either. I saw the trailer, and I was like, really? That's what we're doing now is American Idol with talking animals?
Yeah,
I will not be seeing Sing 2 either.
No, I won't either.
No.
I felt good deleting a journal for Jordan from the Google Doc after I saw the reviews for it.
Oh, are the reviews bad?
It's not good. There's not like a lot of reviews out for it yet, but I was on the fence with that one because I haven't been like super into Denzel's directorial efforts to date. But yeah, it's like that. And like I think I and I also deleted The Kingsman because it's like life's too short.
I'm not seeing I didn't see the second one, so I'm not going to see The Kingsman.
I saw the second one. The second one is like a war crime. It's terrible.
I didn't mind the first
one. I didn't either. That's why like it was so weird to see like the precipitous drop of the second one.
And I forgot that I like used to be kind of a Matthew Vaughn fan because one of the movies that we watched for this had a kick-ass trailer before it.
Was it
maybe
the Lionsgate one?
Yeah, it must have been.
Ooh, that's a tease for
later. It is, it is.
You guys like Lionsgate?
And I forgot how much I, A, like the movie Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
And B, I forgot that I used to like Matthew Vaughn and would like be excited at the prospect of a new Matthew Vaughn movie. And I don't think I'm there anymore.
I kind of feel like going back and watching Stardust. I haven't seen that since
like that movie.
It came out, but I remember liking it.
Yeah.
And I was upset when they were just like, I don't like Sienna Miller. She's vapid. Claire Danes is the place to be. And I'm like, I'd still go with vapid.
So yeah, what have you seen lately?
Okay, so in 2017, we talked about 12 Dates of Christmas.
Yeah, we did.
In 2019, I followed up with Amy Smart's Love and Dancing.
Right.
So in 2021, I was scouring the IMDb's of what is another romantic comedy potential hidden gem starring Amy Smart. So
The Butterfly Effect.
The Butterfly Effect, yes. So I saw Love at First Glance with her and Adrienne Grenier from, like, I think 2017 or 2018.
Oh, it's that old? I thought it was a new movie.
No. It was a Hallmark movie made for the Valentine's Day season.
I thought that was what, like, Grenier was up to these days, was Love at First Glance.
No, but after seeing the movie, I'm not sure what attracted him to this script.
Sure.
Because
Entourage being canceled, I suspect.
It was weird, because he does have sort of, like, he kind of gets away with his dignity in this one, whereas
I'm
not so sure Amy Smart does.
I'm even less happy to hear that.
So the plot of Love at First Glance is she gets dumped because she's not adventurous enough. It's another, like, your lasagna is predictable.
Right.
Which is a Hallmark go-to, apparently.
Wasn't she not adventurous enough in
12 Days of Christmas? Yeah, it's a real problem with her. So
playing it safe, Smart.
So she gets dumped at like this Italian restaurant, and then she's on the train.
Really is, Love Lights Hanukkah.
Yeah, so she gets on the train, and she's eating her to-go tiramisu out of a container. And I bring this up because she's eating the to-go tiramisu for like 3 separate scenes over the span of about 15 minutes of this 80-minute movie, and it was driving me crazy. And I was just like, are you almost done with this? Like, just put it down. So she locks eyes with Adrienne Grenier on the... It's a real, like, it's like that scene in Shame, but they don't go off and have sex. So
better Hallmark movie.
Yeah. By the way, next year's holiday show, Shame. It's NC-17. For 2022, we're just talking about NC-17 movies.
What was the shame in that movie?
I mean, I don't know where.
Yeah,
like, I mean, I guess like he just was preoccupied
he can't
with
stop
sex.
Fucking?
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know. There's a sequence where he has sex with a man, and it's like, can you believe it? And it's like, yeah, I can't believe people do that.
It's like he ruined a lot of laptops.
That's not
like,
the shame.
I'm sure he didn't stick with straight porn.
Could that be the shame?
No, I think it's because, like...
Just catching, computer viruses?
Yeah, it was a real, like, Job's War situation. was shacking up or like almost shacking up with Carrie Mulligan, and that was his sister, wasn't that it, where they had like some kind of weird thing?
Yeah,
where
I
kind of
remember that.
Yeah, I think that was the shame. Maybe
I'd watch that movie. Is
wasn't
that,
it because he loved her and that was the shame?
I don't remember.
And like he decided to like go elsewhere anywhere other than her because that was the shame.
Is that what's going on in that movie?
I don't know. It was a low down dirty shame.
Better movie.
Yeah. It's weird because, like, I saw that at the Landmark Theater in Chicago.
Ooh.
And I think I saw Blue is the Warmest Color at the Landmark Theater. So wow. I think that's like my trench coat theater.
Yeah, that's yeah. your horny place.
That is my horny place. Last movie I saw there, Belfast.
Super horny.
Or no, I didn't see that there. That was Come On, Come On.
Super horny.
What's going on? Anyways, so Love at First Glance, they lock eyes. Adrian Grenier forgets his phone on the train. Amy Smart picks up his phone. She unlocks it. Because his passcode was 1234. There's some sort of way that there's a message where Adrian Grenier says, like, if I've lost my phone, like, contact me at this number. So she contacts him and he's like, I'm going to be out of office, or like, I'm going to be traveling internationally until Valentine's Day. But why don't we meet up on Valentine's Day and you could give me my phone back? And then she's going through his phone and she's seeing pictures of like really bad Photoshop of him like kayaking and like him like hugging a lion in Africa and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, this guy's so interesting. We should do a feature on him in my paper.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So he's just like, I'll tell you what, you've got my phone. You have all my contacts. Contact anybody on my phone and ask them about me. So this is the setup for the movie. So she's just going to like person to person, learning more about him and then falling gradually more in love. It's not a good movie. However, there is this one earth-shattering centerpiece to the movie. It's like halfway through.
I thought this was the premise of the movie. This is just the centerpiece?
Well,
I'm
going to explain the centerpiece.
Okay.
So this is what we find out, like, the tragedy of the Grenier.
Okay.
So Adrian Grenier is kind of like anti-Valentine's Day because his mom got into a car accident while he was writing a Valentine when he was a child. So his dad, who's played by, I think, John Shea, was like a businessman. He was the Peter Banning situation where he just was never around. So young Grenier goes to elementary school, and in elementary school, he's all sad because they're doing Valentine's Day stuff in school. And then this little girl in his class picks up on the fact that he's so sad, and she's just like, hey, let's be friends. So they become friends, and then they become friends for like years and years and years and years, up until the time that they're adults. And then guess what? They decide to get together as a couple. So they're a couple. Then they show a scene where like the two of them are having the time of their lives. They're riding bicycles in the park. But then his girlfriend hits like a rock and her bike flips over a bridge. And it looks like the car accident in Vanilla Sky. And then she gets it. She's in a coma. So then he's waiting by her side, like at her bedside. And she's in this coma for like 8 months. She comes out of the coma. She has amnesia. So Amy Smart is learning all of this because she tracked down this woman's nurse, a male nurse. So she's just like, so they're in this cafe and they're talking and he's telling her the story and everything. So then he goes, you want to take our coffee to go and like, you know, go for a walk? And then she's just like, yeah, sure. So I'm just like, oh, is she going to fall for the nurse? Like, is that what's going to be the wrinkle here?
Better movie.
So what happens is he walks to his house, and in his house in the front yard is the girl that Adrian Grenier was in love with who had the amnesia, and the nurse married her and
what?
Has kids with her.
What?
And he's just like, yeah, it was really tough on him. But we fell in love, and what are you going to do? And that's like, oh, Adrian Grenier is this tragic
figure. Got it.
This, like, cuck I of thought... all time.
Love at first cuck.
Greatest cucks.
I thought when you texted me about the coma stuff that was like the premise of the movie.
No, it's just like the pepper in the
wow.
stew.
Wow.
It's crazy. So I would not recommend it.
Damn
I mean,
it.
Like it's not a bummer, but it's just bad.
Yeah.
It's just kind of lame. But okay. In 2 years, I'll watch another one of these and report back.
Another Amy Smart,
yeah.
She's got to keep making them. She just made that like tornado movie.
Oh, yeah. Who else was in that?
Thora Birch.
That's right.
It's the hottest cast of the year 2001.
Twista Sisters.
Totally. They are totally Twista Sisters.
Yeah. I had a weird night where I was like taking a break from our assignment for this episode. Yeah. And it was so nice because I'm just like, okay, like I can just pick whatever. So I went to the HBO Max and I just was like, I'll just find something on like recently added. So I went with The Mask, which I hadn't seen in like 15 years. And my big takeaway from that movie is that it still rules and that Cameron Diaz is like, it was such a no-brainer that she became like a giant movie star after that movie.
Yep.
And yeah, I like all the Coco Bongo stuff and the swing music.
I haven't watched it in a couple of years, but yeah, that was for Cameron Diaz. That was one of those like movie star, like, holy shit. And I wish she was not retired.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, because Annie was like 7 years ago now.
That was the last one?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did The Counselor ruin everything for her?
I don't think so. I think she just like got tired of the game.
Yeah.
I don't think it was so much like, yeah, the one movie. But I follow that up with a 2001 offering because I only have so many days before.
That's right.
Before they're all expired. I watched Freddy Got Fingered for the first time.
Interesting. I saw it opening weekend and I haven't seen it since.
Okay. Tell me how it played opening weekend, like in the height of Tom Green mania with an audience that was presumably there because they were Tom Green fans.
Well, we saw it on a Sunday afternoon, which was not probably the time to see it.
Okay.
Like, the Tom Green fans, the Greenheads, were probably there Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember it playing well. I don't remember a ton of laughs. It was mostly just confusion.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I was this time. Like, I admired its just ability to just do whatever it wants.
Sure.
I didn't think it was particularly good, but the entire time I was, like, sitting up because I was just like, really? Like, and I saw this Red Letter Media video where they did a review of it, and it kind of contextualized it in an interesting way, which was basically Tom Green was, like, a performer at the time who was too popular not to have a movie showcasing him, but he obviously didn't want to be a movie star.
Right.
So he just was like, all right, this is what I'm going to do with your $15 million just to like completely ruin his movie career, like before it even starts. And from that angle, it was interesting. And every once in a while, there's like a joke here and there that would land, but yeah, it was just odd. And I was a fan of his, like, from his show and Road Trip and things like that. But I just heard like such toxic things about the movie for so long that I just never went to it.
I never watched the show. Mm-hmm. I never particularly warmed up to him as an actor, like even in Road Trip and stuff. It just felt like, let's stick Tom Green in there. The kids like him, you know. And Freddy Got Fingered, I remember just feeling like anti-comedy.
Yeah, it definitely kind of had that anti-comedy vibe. And then this afternoon, instead of going back to watch Nightmare Alley because my contact lens fell out and I couldn't watch it on Friday night, I finally finished Dan in Real Life, even though it took me about 3.5 weeks.
And you've seen it before,
and I've seen it before. Yeah. But, like, I think if they made, like, a box set of, like, sweater movies and then they put, like, a little sweater on the box set.
Yeah.
Like, that, it's like a movie that should be sold in, like, a Hallmark store.
Okay.
And that's not a bad thing. No. I enjoy it.
I like sweater movies.
I enjoy Dan in Real Life, but I do feel like it's either I'm an alien or they're aliens. Like, because I've never, like, experienced a family gathering that's anything remotely like
this, where it's
like, like, we're making pancakes for breakfast, but there's, like, 50 people here, and it's, like, there's, like, one pan, but they've got, like, 300 pancakes on there. Like, it's, like, the ghost from Casper making breakfast. It's, like, that, or, like, let's go outside and do, like, a jazzercise on the lawn, and, like, it's not just, like, two people who are into it, but it's, like, the entire family.
It's
and
like
nobody's
a weird company retreat of, like, a family weekend.
And they have, like, talent shows.
Yeah, it's a company retreat, I'm telling you.
And Dane Cook is, like, way over. He's, like, almost, like, emotionally underdeveloped for a man his age. Like, he's just, like, fawning over, like, Juliette Binoche in, like, a way that's uncomfortable for, like, adults. It's, like, where, like, he needs, like a comment section from, like, the family, like, every time, like, she walks into a room. And it's so weird. And then, like, but then, like, out of nowhere, about an hour into the movie, they go on this double date. And the double date is with this girl who's, they knew from when they were kids, and apparently she was all gross. But then, like, she grew up, and she's Emily Blunt now. Emily Blunt in that movie is, like, maybe the best-looking thing since, like, 99 Eyes Wide Shut Kidman.
I completely forgot Emily Blunt was in that movie.
Like, my eyes were on fire. I was just like, what? She is so, like, fine in that movie. It's unbelievable. But I like the music in it a lot. It's very reminiscent of, like, the Badly Drawn Boy stuff,
right?
Where,
right.
Like, about a boy, it seems like that's what they were going for. So it's a perfect movie. You should watch it. It's on Amazon Prime for, like, the next 13 days.
Hurry up and watch it.
Yeah.
What else is in the sweater box set?
Oh, God, that's a good question. I mean, like, I think You Got Mail would be in the sweater box
okay.
set. I'm trying to think of, like...
While You Were Sleeping?
While You Were Sleeping would be in there. It's like those movies where, like... It's in a cabin or an apartment, and, like, people would walk in, they're like, this is a fabulous apartment. Like, that's, like, the type of thing. Julia and Julia would probably be in the sweater box.
Okay.
Like, any...
A lot of Efron.
I think you throw in some Efrons and some Nancy Meyers. That's
okay.
kind of like Home Again would probably be in there. Stuff like
Don't
that.
Don't make me watch Home Again again.
All right. Well, Home Sweet Home Again.
anything else?
Yeah, we both saw Spider-Man No Way Home.
We could talk about that before I go, or do you want me to end on that?
We could talk about it now because we're here.
Okay.
So I thought that the stuff that is in the trailers and that people knew about pre-release didn't work for me that much. I'm not the biggest fan of the MCU Spider-Man iteration, but the stuff that is spoilers where Antoine Fisher and... Michael Clayton show up was really good, and I think that it redeems a lot of Antoine Fisher.
I'm in a similar boat that I wasn't crazy about, like, the first 90 minutes. I thought it was just weirdly sloppy, and I didn't think it looked very good. I don't mind John Watts as a director, but he felt a little bit out of his depth in this one, I thought. I don't like Marvel's insistence on every fourth line being a joke.
No. Yes. Thank
Especially
you.
Because most of them kind of don't land. You know, they keep going back to it's in the trailer, so this isn't a spoiler. Doctor Strange saying, you know, call me Steven, and then he calls him Steven, and then he goes, that felt weird. And they do that three more times.
Yeah.
And it's like, A, Benedict Cumberbatch is not funny and probably will never be funny.
Right.
And B, it wasn't funny once. It's certainly not going to be funny the fourth time. This is just personal preference.
Yeah.
This isn't anything wrong with Spider-Man No Way Home, but I miss, like, street-level Spider-Man. Where he's just, like, taken down bank robbers and maybe one supervillain. Now that he's part of the MCU, he's going to outer space and he's fighting alternate dimension villains. And we have multiverses and he's interacting with Doctor Strange and there's magic and anything is possible. And that's not what I've always liked about Spider-Man. Spider-Man's always been my favorite comic book character. He's always been my favorite, like, comic book movie character. The first two Sam Raimi Spider-Mans got that right. I thought Homecoming pretty much got that right. I liked Homecoming. Even some of the Andrew Garfield movies just got too big when the lizard is turning armies of SWAT people into lizards. And
those from a story and script level, like, those movies are a mess.
Well, yeah, because again, they're trying to set up a universe and
the
questions about the parents and all the stuff with the Sinister Six, and even just telling the story of Gwen Stacy just because she's different than Mary Jane, but she's essentially just playing Mary Jane. I mean, I don't want to relitigate the Amazing Spider-Man movies, but so I had, as a Spider-Man fan, there's a lot to like in No Way Home, but there's also a lot of stuff I wasn't crazy about.
Yeah, it's a movie that I would love to watch, like, 15, 20 minutes of on Disney Plus, and then I'm like, okay, I got the scenes that I want, and then I'm just gonna go watch Dan in real life again. But one thing I heard, and this is kind of like an argument that I completely reject, is, like, some people have said... oh, well, you know, like now he's Spider-Man, and like everything else leading up to this was like
that's
the
bananas.
Origin story. And I'm just like, you know what movie didn't need that? Spider-Man
right.
from 2002.
Yeah,
it's like, why did you waste my time for like,
right.
by your theory, why did you waste my time for 7 hours on like
right.
nothing of consequence?
Three movies just in this iteration of Spider-Man. That's yeah. not counting the 5 movies
oh,
that
God.
Came before
yeah.
or the appearances in Civil War and Endgame and Infinity War. Like,
yeah.
we've had a lot of Spider-Man, to so to say. I mean, I agree with the idea. I don't want to say anything that would be a spoiler, but like,
it's so tough with this movie. Like, there's no meaningful dialogue you could have about it.
Not
without,
really.
Like,
in
really
a couple weeks, maybe
yeah.
we can come back to it. But, mm-hmm. you know, in theory, if they make a fourth Spider-Man, it's probably going to be more like what I'm talking about in terms mm-hmm. of what I like out of a Spider-Man movie. I think that's okay to say.
Correct.
But I reject the notion that, like, we've just been building to that, that we've been doing the origin for 7 movies.
It's very silly.
Yeah.
And I don't think they did enough with Willem Dafoe or Alfred Molina.
Sure. I don't know. Again, I go back to that line in the trailer where it's like, no, really, what's your name? I'm just like, that's not funny.
Yeah. I just felt like they were borrowing my nostalgia for something not great. And like, it
oh, yeah.
just kind of made it feel gross. So
yeah.
that's why, like, I think when there's
well, this
a
development be called IP the movie.
Yeah, when there's a development like into the movie, like I was like, okay, at least I'm on board for this because you put some thought into it. But like especially Doc Ock, it's just like, you're here, let's neuter you.
Right.
It's like
right.
okay, why bring him in?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
That's so
my
that's,
story, and I'm taken to it.
That's Spider-Man No Way Home. I have a few that I'll talk about before we get to our Spotlight Showcase movie.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Spider-Man,
yeah.
I saw Venom Let There Be Carnage.
Is it your pick of the month?
It is not my pick of the month. I'm realizing that maybe these Venom movies aren't for me. Maybe I'm not the audience.
I could have told you that before you watched it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I think you had talked about it a couple weeks ago because the window is so small now from mm-hmm. when they come out to when they're at the Redbox, which is how I saw it.
Yeah.
And you had said, like, you weren't crazy about the stuff early on with him and Venom, but then once Woody Harrelson and Naomi Harris kind of show up, the movie comes to life.
I might have misspoke.
Okay.
It progressively wore me down. Like,
yeah.
it was at the point where by the time it was the climax, I was, and, like, Michelle Williams was, like, flirting with Venom and stuff.
Yeah.
I was just, like, I just was throwing my hands in the air, and I'm just like, fine, I'm on board, I guess.
Right.
And, like, it defeated me.
Okay.
Like, that's kind of how I saw
okay.
it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I liked the earlier stuff better. I
okay.
liked maybe the first half hour.
Yeah.
Because I will admit, and I didn't feel this the first time around, because I didn't really like that first Venom, which I thought was, like, just too origin-y and too serious. I'm thinking about how he comes to be Venom, and I'm just like, God, I don't care about any of that shit. Like,
mm-hmm.
again, to Spider-Man Homecoming's credit, it just starts and he's Spider-Man, you
yeah.
know? Like, so this movie just starts and he's already Venom, and I appreciate that. And some of their back and forth I thought was funny, and I thought the Venom as voice, like, saying shit to Tom Hardy, I think is funny. I don't know that Tom Hardy's like mumbling, fumbling. I'm not crazy about all that stuff. And
no.
I mean, I like Tom Hardy as an actor, but I don't love what he's doing in these movies. But the stuff that Venom says, I thought was kind of funny, and referring to himself as Lethal Protector and all that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, once it becomes just CGI tentacles fighting with each other,
yeah.
and it's just, what are we doing?
And no Eminem song on the end credits.
No Eminem song to be found.
Actually, no, I think he's in it, like a featuring
Venom
thing.
Venom.
Yeah.
Venom. Venom.
Da, 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 da.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I didn't love it.
No.
I guess I didn't hate it, but
that's it's almost like I gave it a pass because I didn't hate it,
right?
Which is a weird place to be.
But it's like the now yeah. it's the third most successful movie of the year.
Yeah, We're not in a good spot, people.
Not so much.
No.
But there's been a lot of that this weekend. Sky is falling. Like,
yeah. I just am bummed because, like, if Spider-Man is on, like, 22 of the 24 screens, then, like, of course nothing else is going to make money.
Right.
That's more my thing. It's like,
right.
Why not? I mean, like, I guess, like, now it's the thing where it's like you saturate the market, you make every available showtime so nobody can get sold out of anything, and you make it all up front. But, like, this is the type of movie where it would be on, like, 4 screens back in the day, and mm-hmm. then it would just be sold out a lot, and then, like, right. you would just go back.
Right.
And try again. And eventually you would see it. But I don't know. Whatever. I'm howling at the moon like an old man.
I don't wear contacts, so I was able to see Nightmare Alley.
And you. you elitist.
Yeah.
I with your real... two contact lenses.
No, I just wear glasses.
Yeah. Okay, so that's even worse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm a real four eyes. I liked enough of it. I didn't love any of it. It's well directed. I feel like Bradley Cooper is weirdly miscast, and I like Bradley Cooper as an actor, but he feels like somebody who's very contemporary to me.
The original choice was DiCaprio. Do you think he would have been better?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Did you hear that he was supposed to play both Bradley Cooper parts for the movies that are out?
No kidding.
He was, but then he ended up doing Don't Look Up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which
sorry,
you
Leo.
Have not seen.
No, I have.
That's what I thought.
We talked
okay.
about it
yeah,
last
yeah.
time. Yeah,
that's right. That's
it's
right.
not good. But like, yeah, I don't know. Because like, I think Bradley Cooper was so good in Licorice Pizza
He's
that
great.
I don't want to like replace him with
right.
anybody.
I don't either.
But, yeah.
But DiCaprio in Nightmare Alley would have worked better. Mm-hmm. There's something modern about Bradley Cooper that I had a hard time buying him in this period piece.
Yeah.
The rest of the cast is all pretty amazing, including Defoe, including...
Mm-hmm.
Kate Blanchett is a little bit like acting in quote marks,
okay.
But Toni Collette is good and yeah. Rooney Mara is fine. She's mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah.
The stuff at the carnival, which is like the first half hour, 40 minutes of the movie, I was super on board with. And Willem Dafoe gives this speech about geeking. Did you see that part? They're in like a diner.
No, I okay. didn't get to that part yet.
It's my favorite scene in the movie. Okay. Defoe has this monologue about how you get a guy to geek.
Okay.
And it's my favorite thing in the movie.
It's a lot of fun.
Avenge me.
Avenge me.
And then it jumps. I don't want to spoil anything. There's a time jump. And from there on, I was kind of out of the movie a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a little bit of a stylistic exercise.
Okay.
There's meant to be this sort of macabre punchline. I feel like I knew where that was going the entire time. I had just recently seen the original and really liked the original.
I saw it years ago and purposely haven't rewatched it because I knew I was going to watch this.
Okay.
But I remember really liking the old
one. Yeah, it's super good. Yeah. I only saw it, A, because Criterion put it out, and B, because it was the movie that made Tobey Hooper want to make the Funhouse.
Nice. Okay.
And how could I not see that? So I like the original. I thought this one was okay.
I heard in one review that it kind of has like a plus size Tales from the Crypt episode feel to it. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I guess I could see that.
Okay, that makes me more excited about the movie.
We could probably talk about that more after you see the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll you just pause it and I'll be back.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you guys can listen to Gizmo.
Here he comes, Giz. Come on, Giz.
Don't be shy.
Giz. Oh, thank you, Giz.
He just keeps going if you leave
my
it.
Break movie when I was like, I need a break from our assignment.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch... For Love or Money from 1993.
I watched that like maybe during the pandemic.
Yeah?
Yeah. Or well now. I mean, because we're still in the pandemic. But
oh, right.
Like, at the beginning of the pandemic.
The movie works. Let me
oh,
tell you.
Oh, wow. I was not expecting yeah. this. Keep going.
I was just in the right mood for it, I think.
Okay.
Michael J. Fox can kind of make any romantic comedy work because he's just very comfortable and charming. And I feel that Gabrielle Anwar, who's had a pretty successful career, she continues to act. She showed up in a bunch of movies.
She's on Burn Notice.
She was on Burn Notice for a long time. Yeah. So she had a career.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie made me wish that she had been a bigger star.
She's very elegant and pleasant. I like her.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked her a lot. And I was down for all the hotel stuff. I was down for all the New York stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an hour 40. It's very affable. I was on board with For Love or Money.
Have you ever had it where, like, you saw Siskel and Ebert's review of something and something they said, like, it's like osmosis and it becomes your opinion?
No.
Okay, because I remember that with, like, the For Love of Money thing.
Yeah.
Where, like, Siskel was so in on, like, the business aspect to the concierging. And he's just, like, there's, a great scene where they're, like, exchanging tickets and stuff.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I remember when I saw that scene in the movie, I'm just like, this is a great scene. They're just like, bellboy. And he's like, concierge.
Yeah, no, that's a hilarious recurring joke.
Yeah.
And this was Barry Sonnenfeld's second movie after Adam's Family, right?
You could have told me it was like anybody. Like,
That it's a Barry Sonnenfeld movie.
Now that just makes me want Blank Check to do Sonnenfeld even more because I want like the For Love of Money episode.
He tries to move the camera a little bit in a sort of a Raising Arizona style. It's not quite as zany, but you can definitely see there's some camera movement that isn't at home in a traditional generic romantic comedy that is like, oh, that's because Barry Sonnenfeld is showing off.
Who plays the third wheel? Like,
not a famous guy.
Not a famous guy.
Are you talking about? Like the rich businessman that
Gabrielle Anwar is
with.
Okay.
He might be somebody. I'm looking it up as we talk.
Was it the guy like Roger Reese or something from Cheers? Was it that guy?
He's the villain in If Looks Could Kill, which Gabrielle Anwar is in.
Okay. I don't know.
I'm looking up Christian right now in For Love or Money.
While you do that, you know who loves For Love or Money?
Who's that?
My Yiddisha Bubby.
Oh, Bubby. Anthony Higgins.
Yeah, no. No idea.
He's in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Huh. Who does he play? Yeah.
Gobbler?
Oh, sure. Gobbler.
Gobbler? I don't know how we say it.
Yeah, I don't know either.
He stopped acting in 2016. But he is still alive.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could have gotten awkward.
I bet you him and Cameron Diaz are hanging out.
I assume
just
so.
They're like, you want to do another movie? And then they just go, not really.
I was Christian in For Love or Money.
I was Christian in everything.
Should we do our Spotlight Showcase movie?
We should. Our holiday Spotlight Showcase.
Yeah.
Vanguard pick. This year is a little movie that was straight to HBO Max, came out around Thanksgiving, called 8-Bit Christmas. That's really Patrick playing.
I'm pretty good.
Yeah. Whoa, how'd you do that?
Two mouths.
Two mouths, one heart. Shame.
Oh, Shame really should have been our holiday movie.
Well, next year.
Yeah.
NC-17 holiday show.
our Spotlight Showcase Vanguard movie is 8-Bit Christmas,
yes.
Which I have to say, early on, I was really resisting.
Okay.
Because I was like, so you're just doing a Christmas story, but also a commercial for Nintendo? Fuck this movie.
Yeah, it is pretty naked in its aspirations.
Yeah, but it's advertising a Nintendo that doesn't exist anymore. So it's not even that they're necessarily... It's weird that they're like lionizing something that's so brand name and something that you can still buy. But at the same time, it's like we're far enough away from the original Nintendo Entertainment System that it's like, well, what else are they going to do?
Yeah.
By the end, it had won me over enough.
Is it because of Steve Zahn?
It's kind of because of Steve Zahn, although I will admit that the movie tries to land somewhere with the Steve Zahn character that I would argue it didn't earn.
Yeah, I would say
it's
so.
It's like, that's not what this movie has been about.
Yeah, and I was wondering if, so at the end of the movie, not to spoil it too much, but there's like...
We're kind of spoiling 8-Bit Christmas. So fast forward like 5 or 10 minutes if you don't want to hear us spoil 8-Bit Christmas.
So at the end of the movie, there's the grown-up version of the little boy that we're following throughout the whole movie is Neil Patrick Harris, and he's at his mother and father's house with his daughter, and you see like only his mother is there, and like... The father is not there, and neither is the sister. So I'm wondering, I'm like, does the sister, are we supposed
to... The sister is there, isn't she?
I didn't think she was.
Were you thinking that the other woman was Neil Patrick Harris's wife?
Yeah.
I thought it was the sister.
No, I thought it was the wife.
Which makes me ask where
the
wife is.
No, it is the wife.
It is
the
wife,
because it's he names her, and it's the name of the girl on the bus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they ended up... Yeah.
That went over my head, obviously.
So it's just like, is the sister dead, too?
It's good that you're supposed to meet the person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with when you're 8.
Yeah, you know, that happens.
Right.
I have a weird quibble with this movie.
Just one?
Takes place in the Chicagoland area. It takes place in Batavia.
Right.
These kids don't have Illinois faces.
No.
None of them look like they're from Illinois.
Okay.
Which I think is a problem with casting.
Yeah.
Because I do like that it's a throwback in the sense, because I was talking to Rosalie about this yesterday. What, like, there must have been some kind of like giant tax credit in the early 90s to shoot in Chicago because it was like the Georgia.
Yeah,
now,
right.
Now.
Yeah.
And like, if you didn't know any better, you would think Christmas only existed in Chicago and that, like, everybody else was just like, have you heard what the thing that they're doing in Chicago? We should probably do that. It's really fun. Like, I thought, like, because everything, like, whether it was John Hughes or, like, whatever. I mean, like, it just was always, like, it's not true Christmas unless you're in the Midwest. And
well, we're
going to
talk about a Chicago winter movie that I feel gets Chicago winter right. That's going to come up later.
Yeah.
But Christmas Vacation is not it.
No.
I like Christmas Vacation a lot, but they clearly shot that in Los Angeles.
This is true. Yeah. Yeah. Christmas Vacation is a fun movie.
It is.
It reminded me of a time when every 80s comedy had animated credits.
I take issue with the notion that Chevy Chase, throughout this series, keeps flirting with and or trying to fuck other women when he's married to Beverly fucking D'Angelo.
Yeah. An actress who will cup your dick. Like, she didn't need to, but, like, she's clearly digging in there.
Erica just leaned over to me, like, a third of the way through the movie and was just like, Beverly D'Angelo is really a fox in this. I was like, I know.
Yeah, she's wearing, like shirts, like, at a family party that show up for décolletage. And
insane.
I'm just like, this is pretty great. Al Pacino knew what he was doing.
He did.
He's just like, let's have some babies. He's a sealer. And I'm the shark. And you're Chrissy, and you got no chance because I'm pulling you down into my love.
And he got the tango with Gabrielle Anwar. That dude's got it made.
Do you think, oh no, that's too gross.
Oh God.
I was going to say, do you think when Al was making love to Beverly, it was like when the shark was eating Quint?
Yes, I do think that.
One of my favorite stories about Al Pacino is Diane Keaton said that going out to dinner with him, it's like giving a steak to a feral animal. That all he does is like talk about Shakespeare and New York theater and like eats steak like he was raised by wolves.
I love it.
I love it, too. 8-Bit Christmas.
Oh, yeah, right. That's what we're talking about.
I thought it was better than I expected because, like, these Netflix movies are... I'm noticing, like, HBO Max straight-to-streaming movies are usually of a certain quality. They're, like, pretty decent.
Yeah.
And, like, Amazon Prime usually is pretty decent. Netflix,
sure.
I have my long-held disdain for.
I can't think of one like a Netflix premiere. I mean, Power of the Dog, we've talked about.
Yeah, like their acquisitions, I think. Like, was that always meant to be Netflix or was
I honestly
like
don't
acquisition?
Know.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess there is a difference between like acquisitions and then movies we're making.
Mm-hmm.
I have yet to see like a movie Netflix is making, and I haven't seen Red Notice yet, so I could be wrong.
Oh, sure.
That's memorable or good in any way.
Yeah. I mean, I guess The Irishman was theirs because they, like...
Oh, well, then that Scorsese. Counts.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's, like, that
That's
and Roma and stuff, but, like, they have just so much, like junk.
Right.
Like,
right.
It overshadows whatever
right.
quality movies they do.
Yeah, for sure. So. Yeah, I mean, the structure of 8-Bit Christmas is sort of unnecessary, again, except it's mm-hmm. meant to echo A Christmas Story about a kid who wants a Nintendo more than anything, and Neil Patrick Harris is narrating the story to his daughter.
Yep.
They had him for 2 days, you know, mm-hmm. so they get a movie star in there.
Yeah.
But there were some things that genuinely made me laugh.
I
don't remember what they were because I watched it like a month ago, but my kids liked it. That's worth something.
Did you have like Nintendo fever when you were a kid in the 80s?
I did because we couldn't have one.
Okay.
But all my friends did.
Yeah.
So I definitely liked going. And I didn't even like playing Nintendo that much, but I liked going to their houses and watching them play Nintendo.
Yeah.
I was content to just do that, unless it was that pro wrestling game
okay.
with Great Puma and Starman and stuff, because that I liked to play.
Yeah.
But I wanted a Nintendo really badly.
Yeah, we got a Nintendo, I think, like a year after it was like the hot Christmas
okay.
item.
Yeah.
And I remember like being really excited about getting it. And then like the big thing for me was the bookmobile would always have like one or two Nintendo games. And
oh.
it was like every kid in the neighborhood like would run to get in line for the bookmobile to get like those.
Right.
Those games, and I might have gotten into a fight once.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but I was the aggressor, and I apologized, and I gave the kid the game.
Well, that was nice of you.
I ran past him up the bus stairs, because I'm just like, fortune favors the bold. And then the kid's just like, I'm in a wheelchair. And I was just like, and I'm just like, I'm sorry.
I'm getting to that bookmobile first.
I'm like, Metroid, you are mine. Playtime is over.
Up, down, left, left, right. I don't know.
I don't know
any of the cheat codes or anything. Somebody could make that joke a lot better than me. But
give me a Bonk's Adventure, baby.
<It's>
like,
please.
Why are you talking like the mask?
Yeah.
Somebody
right?
stop me from taking games from children that I shouldn't be.
My one friend didn't have a Nintendo. He had a Sega Genesis.
I had a Sega. I went from NES to Sega.
Yeah, I think he had a Sega and then he got a Genesis. But yeah, I used to like his Sega because we used to play a lot of Double Dragon
mm-hmm.
and a lot of Altered Beast.
Yeah. Sega was like one of my first like forms of self-care because I would always like veg out by turning the volume down on the Sega, playing like Aladdin or Virtua Racer or something and listening to like Jagged Little Pill.
Oh, interesting.
And it was just like, you haven't like experienced Aladdin unless A, you've seen Guy Ritchie's Aladdin, or B, you've heard like Hand in My Pocket while Aladdin is stealing an apple from a market.
He's got an apple in one hand and the other one's given a high five.
Yeah. Exactly.
Did you watch the Alanis documentary yet?
I haven't yet. There's too many like Music Box documentaries,
yeah.
so I'm waiting until January because
okay.
like it was cool like that they had Woodstock in July, but then like it's not cool that they have like five of the other ones like within a month of each other.
What are the other ones?
There's Juice WRLD, Kenny G.
What's Juice WRLD?
He was a rapper who died.
I don't know.
DMX, speaking of rappers
who
died.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Atlantis,
movie, yeah.
And then Robert Stigwood.
I don't know who Robert Stigwood
is. He is the guy behind one of the guys behind the Bee Gees, and he was a producer on like Saturday Night Fever.
Oh, okay.
Grease and stuff like
Got
that.
Got it.
Yeah, he was kind of a Travolta collaborator in the early part of his career. So I will get to it, but I heard not great things about it.
Ah, I see.
So...
yeah, I'm in this weird place now where, like, my top 10 is not done.
Yeah, neither with mine.
I have 8, maybe 9, and yet I've written it off. I'm just like, I'm not watching stuff to try to fill out a top 10 anymore. I'm sick of it. I'm done with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just watching for love or money. I'm watching shit that I want to watch.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have, like, 5 new movies that could potentially maybe be in there.
I have
1. I have to see. And then I've got, like, 5 I need to rewatch. And then we'll see what happens.
I got to hear what these are after the show.
Yeah. So far, and I'm going to be sad if it falls off, but Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City is my number 15 movie of the year.
I'm excited. I hope it stays there.
I hope so, too. I hope all these movies that I'm looking forward to fail.
Yes.
Except for one. There's one in particular I'll be sad if it fails.
It's probably the same one that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
That I'm hoping ends up on my top 10.
It stars Antoine Fisher and Michael Clayton.
And they're both very good.
Yeah, and they are resurrected.
Should we get into our 12 days?
Yes.
Okay, hold on. First, I have to give you something.
Okay. Oh!
The first gift.
Gifts?
Of the holiday show.
What the fuck?
There you go.
What is this?
It's a Squishmallow.
It's a Squishmallow that's Jewish, and he's got a yarmulke.
It's a Hanukkah bear Squishmallow. Man.
And he's got a menorah on his stomach.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's massively overweight. Mm-hmm. I love it.
He's sort of egg-shaped.
Yeah, hold on. Bubby, what do you think of this guy?
That answer couldn't have been more perfect.
Yeah, but I think as we go into whatchamacallit, our main theme, let's crack open our Revolution Brewing Fistmas beer.
Oh, God.
Which has a muscle-bound Santa crawling down your chimney.
Yeah, it's called Fistmas.
It's a red ale with ginger and orange peel, full of festive flavors for jolly, joyful jingles.
This is a beer?
It is a beer. It's proudly brewed only in Chicago. If it was L.A., we could be drinking
made by,
gin
like,
hella brew.
Dave Franco and his buddies?
Does he have buddies?
On that show. Did you watch that show?
No.
I thought you did. I forgot. The Joe Swanberg Netflix show.
Oh, no.
Easy, it was called.
Oh, no. I didn't watch that. Okay.
It was good. All right. But it was all about Dave Franco running a microbrewery out of his garage.
I'm smelling this like it's wine.
I was, too, because I'm like, I don't know if I want to fucking drink this. Adam's face is not reassuring. But it's Fistmas.
It's not the worst, but it's like... It's like the part of a blue moon that's like you power through to get to the good stuff.
What's the good stuff?
I like wheat ale, but like this is kind of more ale-y tasting than weedy.
I feel like
tasting.
This is the first time I've had beer on the show. No, that's not true. I maybe like in 2010, me and Doug did a show where we were drinking beer.
Speaking of you and Doug, when I went to go see Nightmare Alley during the previews, all of a sudden something was talking in my pocket, and it was Doug from the Pearl Harbor episode that I was listening to in the car on the way over.
That's the way Nightmare Alley is meant to be seen.
Yeah, yeah. I rewatched Pearl Harbor and wrote an article for this movie this week.
It will be up by the time this podcast comes out.
It does not hold up.
It wasn't good at the time.
No, it wasn't. But I thought Jamie King was my scene stealer.
Is she still?
Yeah.
She's the sacrificial lamb of that movie, isn't she?
She's the only one that makes me feel anything. Yeah. Like, even though everybody's dying at Pearl Harbor, it's like an exciting action scene. And I'm that's why this is wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
I think Jennifer Garner was mine.
Okay. Now it's Beckinsale.
No.
For my crush.
No.
For your crush?
Beckinsale? No. Still Garner.
I don't know. I mean, like...
No, easy.
I like Kate Beckinsale's face.
I can't. I've yet to see something where I really like warm up to Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah.
I recognize that she's very
objectively
very pretty, but in terms of like,
she's good enough for Corbin. She's good enough for me. Before we get into that, though, I did prepare. A song.
Oh, it wouldn't be the holiday show without it.
As would be tradition for the holiday show. So, I think you might be familiar with the Christmas song.
Like Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire?
Yeah, yeah. So,
I forget that it's called the Christmas song, and I always just call it Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire.
Well, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire is now called the AMC song.
Oh, nice.
So, here we go. Heartbreak feels good in a place like this. Nicole Kidman surely knows. Spider-Man screenings being played by the hour, and folks dressed up like they're Neo. Everybody knows the Kingsman will most likely blow. You know what looks lame? The 355. Tiny Tots, ready for Sing 2 or Disney's Encanto? We'll need kid combo treats tonight. They know that Scream is on its way. There's plenty of hip new social media active cast members for Ghostface to slay. And Adam Riske is gonna cry if they decide Sidney Prescott, Dewey, or Gale have gotta die. And so take out your phone for new VRcade. There's still 10 minutes till House of Gooch.
Gooch.
Though the app is froze many times for many days. AMC theaters. Ooh woo. Yeah.
Yay. Yeah. That was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You even worked in Newbie.
I had a Winter Wonderland riff.
Yeah.
But I thought it was too mean, but it had a lyric that was like, Cinemark, fuck your popcorn. Landmark 2, that is not corn.
Yeah, it's not good, is it?
Every movie theater has bad popcorn except for the music box.
Yeah.
So what do you want to start with?
All right. 12 Days of Travolta Cage.
Yeah.
Being a Cage fan, I'm going to start with Cage.
Okay.
I'll start with the first one I watched.
Okay.
Which was Knowing, directed by Alex Proyas.
Yes.
In which Nicolas Cage predicts the end of the world through the use of codes.
Yes.
Left by, spoilers, aliens.
This is correct.
This is a bananas movie.
Mm-hmm. I was stunned when you told me or reminded me that Knowing was a hit.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to think, because this came out in 2009, so yeah. It's like, what was Cage doing at the time? But like, he was kind of hot and cold during that period, because it was like, he had National Treasure 2, which was a hit.
Yeah.
But then it was like Next, which was not a hit.
No.
Bangkok Dangerous, which was not a hit.
Nope.
And I think 09 was like G-Force, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, and Knowing.
Yeah.
And like, when you told me like how much money Knowing made, I'm just like, I have no idea how like a general audience would like embrace this movie. But like, the thing that is interesting to me is this reminds me of like a sci-fi movie that would like not be a hit in theaters, but then like would have like this little like cult following.
Yeah.
And people are just like, oh, Knowing is actually like really good. And then like, it would be more popular now, but it almost seems like the opposite happened, where
everyone
like,
has forgotten it.
It was popular at the time. Yeah. And then like, there is no following for it.
Not at all. Yeah. The movie grossed about $184 million.
Worldwide. Okay.
Yeah. So it made a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, right? Like, no one really talks about it. No one really remembers it.
Yeah.
The trailers didn't give away anything about aliens or any of the weird directions this place would go, or its incredibly bleak ending.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Instead, it was just like, hey, want to see like a disaster and Nicolas Cage unravel codes? You love that in the National Treasure movies.
You love the number 23.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But this is sort of on the – this is right on the brink of where he kind of pivots to the DTV market.
Yeah.
His theatrical movies are starting to dry up right around 2009. I mean, he still is – you know, he has Kick-Ass the next year. And
not that the movie is cheap, but it looks kind of cheap.
Knowing?
Yeah.
Yeah. It costs $50 million, which is a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I recognize that, like, there's a lot of effects, but, yeah, they look like computer effects.
Yeah. And I want to – because I've been kind of, like, nitpicking it already. But I will say, like, I really like it.
Yeah.
And I think that it's an amazingly – like sad and effective and kind of just dour experience, like for what it's trying to do. I think it's really, really strong at it.
It reminded me a lot of Spielberg's War of the Worlds minus the entertainment value.
Sure.
Like minus the fun.
Yeah. It's like this death march.
Yeah. But yeah, it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Nicolas Cage is good in it. Roger Ebert famously gave this movie 4 stars.
Yeah.
He was one of the few who really embraced it and was a huge champion of Alex Proyas.
Yeah.
Who has only made, what, one movie since this?
What was it? I don't remember. Did he do The Fall? Or no, it's Tarsem.
No, he did, Gods of Egypt, maybe?
Oh, yeah, that's right. And then he, like, got all pissy because people didn't like Gods of Egypt.
Yeah, which I haven't seen Gods of Egypt.
I know either.
David Chen of the Slash Film Cast was a huge proponent of Gods of Egypt, but
no,
I haven't seen it. But I like Dark City. I like The Crow.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge iRobot guy, although if that's your worst movie, like, you're doing okay.
Yeah, iRobot's, like, a perfect, like, Friday the weekend it came out movie.
Yeah, and then that's it. Yeah. Yeah, it's watchable.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, this one really kind of got to me this time. Like, the entire time I was watching it, I was... like, just real, like, it was definitely heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just like when you're drinking, your fistmas, like every sip, we're just like
wincing through the,
it's like the entire human experience, like, as we're taking a sip. But this movie, like, really goes for it in, like, the despair department.
Yeah. 'Cause
it's like, every spoiler for knowing, like, everybody's gonna die at the end except for the children who are gonna go into a,
not get, all the children, just the two children.
I thought it, no, but like several.
Oh, was it
ships,
all the children?
Seven,
yeah,
I think
right,
it was all.
Right.
I think it was a lot of children or all the children.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, in the last bit of the movie, they're going to, they get dropped off in this planet that's got a tree,
tree of life.
Sure, but it's just like, you're not going to leave them with, like, some food?
Nah.
Anything?
They're going to eat the tree.
They're going to eat the tree.
There's an alien babysitter who's just running late.
It's just... and they don't seem worried. They're like, we got our rabbit, so we're all right. They're going to turn into a...
mankind has been deemed basically unworthy of survival and is wiped the fuck out.
And before that, it's not good enough that they're going to get wiped the fuck out at, like, say, 11 o'clock. They're just like, we should probably kill Rose Byrne in a graphic car accident, too. Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. This was before that Hollywood knew she was funny. This was, like, the year before they knew she was funny.
They had no idea what to do with her.
No. Yeah, because I always liked Rose Byrne because she would, like, pop up in, like, Wicker Park or Sunshine or stuff like that. And she was always good.
Yeah.
And, like, then I remember when I saw, like, Get 'Em to the Greek, I was just like, they've been caging this for, no pun intended, for, like, for years and, like, not letting her be funny. And she had, like, that run with Get Them to the Greek and Bridesmaids and, like, the Neighbors movies and stuff where she really got to show her stuff. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, what, Girl Boss? What's that movie? With her and Salma Hayek.
Oh, God. And what was it? Like a Boss?
Like a Boss. Yeah. There you go. Not Girl
I saw
Boss,
the trailer for that so many times.
Good. Was and it then, funnier and funnier each time you saw it?
Yeah, it was. And then there was a pandemic. And then it was like Pearl Harbor. It's like, and then all this happened.
And then all this happened. That line is in the movie, right?
Yeah.
I haven't been making that up all these years.
No, she says, it's the funniest scene in the movie because it's
fucking real.
It's the Jerry Springer scene where it's just like, what?
I was going to tell you about the baby, right?
Yeah.
But then all this happened.
And
when she says
all
this, she's referring to the attack on Pearl Harbor.
You know, like you do.
That fucking movie.
Yeah, it's not great.
No, it's not.
Yeah, no, knowing is good if you're in the mood for a downer.
It's got that one crazy sequence with the plane crash where Nicolas Cage is running around and it's all done in one continuous take.
Yeah.
Again, the effects are bad. You know, you have people on fire and it looks like bad CG fire and the plane doesn't look very real. But I admire the movie's ambition. It's the kind of crazy movie that Nicolas Cage, you know, has been drawn to his entire career. It probably would have been seen as career suicide for most actors because it is so dark, because it's so out there. But with Nicolas Cage, we kind of expect weird idiosyncratic stuff. So he's able to get it made without rewriting the ending.
Yeah. I also like, this is kind of before he was known, Ben Mendelsohn. And I always love
watching
him in movies like wrestle with an American accent.
Right.
Like, it's like an Olympian wrestler and trying to nail it down.
And before he was known, Liam Hemsworth in a one-line cameo in a class at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, I hope the aliens Frosted made an exception and took Liam Hemsworth with them. They're just like, have you seen, he might be an eight. We should take him.
Independence Day resurgence.
Yeah. That's how he got the... Yeah. He's just like, I know a thing or two about these aliens.
He does.
I was in knowing.
Right?
Yeah.
Independence
Day resurgence is a movie. I can't even speak. It won't allow me to say this. Independence Day resurgence is a movie that exists.
I have seen it and can confirm.
Yeah.
One of the worst movies I've ever seen.
I remember seeing that with my parents, and then we went to get Chinese food afterwards, and we were all, like, in disbelief. We're just like, is this what movies are now? Like, what is this?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little rough.
Yeah.
It's a bit rough. All right, so is it my turn?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so I will pick John Travolta.
Sure.
I'll pick the first movie that I watched.
Okay.
Like you did with Cage. And that is 2004 is The Punisher.
Yes.
And I am the world's biggest fan of the 2004 Punisher.
Interesting.
I think it's
okay.
Awesome.
Okay.
It's by far Jonathan Hensley's best movie.
What else has he made?
I don't know. Darkness Falls.
Oof.
I think that was... He's Oof. Done some other stuff. He did Battle Los Angeles.
Oof.
I didn't see that. But
I
like,
did.
It's bad.
It had such a good trailer.
That's maybe the first movie that did like the slow sad
song. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it had such a good trailer.
Yeah.
And it was so shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the Jungle, Kill the Irishman, The Ice Road. Is that the Liam Neeson one? Yeah.
I think so.
Where he's driving
the
snowplow?
No, that was Cold Pursuit. Or did he do a movie called The Ice Road?
He did a movie called The Ice Road.
Okay.
I think it went right to Netflix, maybe, which would explain it.
All
right. But yeah, I think you're right. Cold Pursuit is the snowplow one.
Yeah.
But he did do The Ice Road.
Yeah. I think Cold Pursuit's a Colette Sarah movie, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think you're right. Kill the Irishman, Welcome to the Jungle. He was a writer on Next.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's been a writer on, like, he was a writer on Gemini Man. He was uncredited. Uncredited on The Rock, Con Air, Virus.
He's been kicking around.
Gone in 60 seconds, so he's like Cage's go-to rewrite man.
Interesting. So,
or Bruckheimer's go-to rewrite man, I guess, is probably more accurate.
Okay. But, I don't know what it is. I see a different movie than everybody else with The Punisher.
You might.
But I like Thomas Jane as The Punisher. I think he's the right choice for, like, stoicism action guy. And I think it's good Travolta because he's reined in a little bit. He's not, like, going too crazy. And then the supporting cast is, like, just peppered with people that I like. Like,
yeah.
Will Patton and, what's her name? From Mulholland Drive.
Laura Elena Herring.
Laura Elena Herring, Rebecca Romaine, the John Pinette, Ben Foster tandem, which is like C-3PO and R2-D2. I think it's just like, I have no affinity for The Punisher as a comic, so I think that's maybe the reason why a lot of people don't like it.
Yeah.
But for me, just as kind of this vigilante action movie, I think it's awesome because it's like the action scenes I think are solid and it's not manic. It like is telling a story and it cares about its characters.
Okay.
So
I'm back and forth on it. Like, I think it's okay. I want to like it a little more than I do. And part of it is because I did used to read the comic. I'm familiar with like the Garth Ennis run that this movie pulls a lot from.
Yeah.
And so like when Kevin Nash shows up as the Russian, it's like, well, that's out of a different movie. That's because that's directly out of the comic book. And the tone of that sequence is so bizarre compared to the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
I almost wish that this was called something else, that this wasn't the Punisher.
I could see
that. It was just like a weird Death Wish riff.
Yeah.
And didn't need to be a Punisher movie, because then I think it would actually be pretty successful is just sort of an 80s-esque action movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because I agree with you, the action is decent. It pays attention to its characters. I like the supporting bench. I'm back and forth on Travolta. I don't think I really like to see him play a villain. And weirdly, he's done it a lot.
Yeah.
I think it works in Face Off and not really anywhere else.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think it works for me more than that. But I like that he's... Where I have issues with him playing the villain is like in Taking a Pelham 1-2-3,
right,
where it's like he's got no dial.
Right.
And
in this
one, it's like he basically just said, you know, I'm criminal with panache who like will lose his temper. And that's about it. So
yeah, it just it undermines, I think, what works about him as a movie star.
It kind of I was just about to say something similar. It kind of dims his like star image, because he seems to almost be like kind of underplaying,
right?
As to not show up like or steal Tom Jane's movie from him.
Yeah,
so I don't know, but
I wouldn't mind seeing him give that same performance in the Thomas Jane role and give Will Patton the Travolta role.
Probably better movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
give Thomas Jane the Will Patton role. They just musical chairs that shit.
How about Will Patton is the Punisher?
Sure, I'll watch it.
He's just like, I got a beef. He's like, you killed my family, and I'm not too thrilled with what you with your choices. And people are just like quaking in their boots, and he's like, I'm gonna stop this.
I mean, it gets a little bit ridiculous with like the fake fire hydrant.
Oh yeah.
So that there's parking tickets. Yeah. I mean, it just becomes a little bit insane in terms of like his whole scheme.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like any time a character starts a fire and it reveals their insignia. I don't like it in The Crow. I don't like it in Daredevil. I don't like it in The Punisher.
Yeah. In The Punisher, it's a little bit ridiculous.
It's a lot ridiculous in The Punisher.
It's in a car lot. And it's just like, he's just like, all right, I got to drive. Hold on, let me look at the photo.
But Travolta has one of those fucking Con Air deaths where it's like... He gets shot, he gets dragged behind a car, he gets set on fire, and then he gets blown up.
Yeah. it's pretty good. I like that Laura Elena Herring is like going to the movies every Thursday night because she's just like, I got to go opening night.
Right.
She's like one of the stubbies. She's just like, it's No Way Home.
Right.
John.
It's going to be spoiled for me.
Or Howard Saint.
I don't go Howard, yeah. Howard Saint, that's his name.
Yeah. And then she gets on her like... She has like she's one of those YouTubers that does like the ride home videos. You know what I'm talking about?
No,
they have
all
that's
a real thing.
Yeah, there's all these YouTubers where they're just like, "Hi, this is Adam. This is my parking lot review. I'll have my spoiler review later."
I don't like YouTube.
Yeah,
I mean, I say this as somebody who now has a site where, you know, every week there's a YouTube piece,
yeah.
And I like what you guys are doing on YouTube because it's not what you're describing right now.
Yeah, we kind of had like
we're not chasing clicks with with our YouTube content.
Yeah, I get excited when I'm just like, this one broke 100, like 100 views. The thing that I noticed early on was I'm like, Rob, we're being too presentational. Like, I just feel like I just want to be talking to you.
Right.
Like, so we were kind of like, let's just like completely forego any type of like introductions of this stuff. And then they'll figure it out. The video's called this.
Right.
They'll figure it out.
Right.
So, yeah. This is that's my review of the work that I do. Yeah, but
have you seen the longer cut of The Punisher?
I haven't. No,
okay, I haven't either.
No, and I haven't seen like that short that I think is like
Dirty Laundry.
I have seen that scene with the Johnny Cash guy,
yes,
who is one of the villains from Fire Down Below. I don't know why I remember that, but I think it's fantastic.
Fire Down Below.
No, just that.
Oh,
scene.
That
and,
scene.
Well,
yeah,
Fire
that's
Down
a good scene.
Well, Fire Down Below is great.
Fire Down Below is the Helgenberger one, right?
Yeah, it's maybe my second favorite Seagal.
Behind
Under Siege.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm just a stand for Fire Down Below because anytime like he's fixing somebody's porch and deciding that he's Southern.
He's Southern quite a bit.
Yeah.
Now he's Russian all the time, but he used to be Southern all the time.
Vladimir Putin.
Yeah. Now he's always like weird European special ops.
Yeah, yeah. So, do you prefer Punisher 04 or Punisher Warzone?
I probably prefer Warzone.
Okay.
But in terms of it being a Punisher movie.
Yeah.
I find the violence of Warzone and sort of the cartoonishness of it very entertaining, but it kind of depends on the mood I'm in. Cause sometimes I'm more in the mood for Punisher 04 when I want just like an 80s throwback and I'll put that on.
Yeah. Punisher Warzone, I'll always remember as the best example of uproarious delayed laughter that I've ever had because it's that scene where the parkour guy gets like I remember seeing it was like a midnight show on opening night and I was half asleep because I did like improv in the city and then was at a bar for like 2 hours after that, and then when I saw that I was just like, did I just fucking see what I think I just saw? And then I just started laughing for like a minute straight.
It's amazing.
It was pretty great.
I missed that in theaters, I think, because I feel like Charlie had just been born.
Mm-hmm.
Or did it come out in 2009?
No, it was 2008.
Okay, so it was 2008. So Charlie literally had just been born.
Mm-hmm.
So I missed it in theaters. I didn't see it till DVD. But And I didn't even totally like it that much the first time I saw it. I think mm-hmm. I had to review it for DVD Verdicts, and I think I panned it.
Okay.
And I've come around on it. I find it very entertaining.
Yeah. All right, what's next?
Should I do a Cage or should I pivot to a Travolta?
It's your choice.
Well, I don't want to hog all the Cages.
All right, you pick a Travolta.
All right, I'll do a Travolta. Let's do one of the Travoltas that I picked.
Okay. You picked one good one. And then two were almost like passive aggressive. Like, I don't like John Travolta choices.
No,
I know.
No, truly not at all. One of them. Okay, so I'll choose that one now.
Yeah.
I'll choose Experts. And that
Please,
was the one where I.
It's declarative. It's the Experts.
The Experts. I'm sorry. I just wrote Experts on here. The Experts, which I even joked when I chose it. Like, I'm going to choose The Experts because I choose chaos. Knowing that it wasn't good, knowing that it was not a movie that I liked, but it's a movie that I haven't seen in 30 years.
Only available in standard definition.
Only available in standard def. One of three movies on our list that I don't own, unfortunately. So I had to rent three of these movies.
He doesn't just mean... No, I thought you meant like just any movie ever. You're like, I can't do it with The Experts. A Serbian film, yes, but I can't do it with The Experts.
The Experts is from 1989, although it has the feel of a movie that sat on the shelf for like 4 years.
You are correct.
It did sit on the shelf?
Not for 4 years, but for 2 years.
Did it really?
And they were, who directed it? Dave Thomas?
Dave Thomas.
Dave Thomas wanted...
From Wendy's.
The studio apparently wanted Dave Thomas to do reshoots, but he couldn't because in the 2 years, Travolta gained 30 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
Which... I'm happy about because that just is like I'm in love weight.
Yeah, right.
And because that's the big takeaway for me from this movie is him and Kelly Preston. I'm happy they met on this movie, and I think they're adorable together.
Yeah.
And like you could tell like just immediately just how much they like each other, and that kind of warms my heart. But and I will say I was talking to you about this over text. I think this is kind of an inspired premise for a movie.
It's a little sweaty.
It is sweaty.
It's
but
like a little too much of a premise.
I think in the right hands, it could have been really good.
Well,
like if
it
you
was
put like Frank Oz in charge of this or
something.
Yeah.
So the premise is Travolta and Ari Gross,
mm-hmm.
who are equal in star power.
The whole time I was watching this, I was just like, this guy's been nominated for an Academy Award and somehow he's in The Experts. Like, you don't put into context like how far a person's star can fall.
And this is only 2 years. This is the same year then that he made Look Who's Talking.
Yeah, I think, well, I don't know when this came out in 89, but Look Who's Talking was October. So at least he kind of went out, I think, on the high note for the 80s, but... But he was kind of in the wilderness for a little while.
The first
while
Look Who's Talking was 87, right?
89.
The first Look Who's Talking?
Yeah, it was 89, 2 was 90, and now was 93.
Oh my gosh, why the hell did I think it was 87?
No. I don't know.
All right, well, good. I'm glad he did go out on a high.
Yeah.
They are like would-be club owners who are kidnapped by Russians and transplanted to a small town in Russia. That's meant to look and feel like a small... They're told it's a small town in...
Nebraska. Yeah.
And it's just like picket fence, Americana, small town.
Yeah.
But really, it's a training ground for KGB agents to like learn how to be American.
Right.
And they're told they can open a club there.
And they hadn't updated anything in the town since the 1950s.
Right.
So it's like total culture shock when... Travolta and like Ari Gross are talking about Walkmen or like or just like the music that they play in the club and things like that.
So. There's like one almost funny sequence where who plays the KGB handler? I'm blanking. Charles Martin Smith is talking to Kelly Preston and asking her this battery of questions.
Oh yeah.
And they're all just like, have you ever been slam danced? And like using all this contemporary slang.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if the movie was more of this, if it was more about like trying to understand small town America trying to adapt to or understand, you know, coastal America or something like that. There's room here for satire, like you said. There's a premise that could be funny.
Yeah.
This movie takes no advantage of that.
Not really. I mean, like, it's a comedy that's just never funny. And it's not like a comedy that's like, oh, I enjoyed watching it even though it was never funny. It's just kind of sits there.
Yeah.
And like is very just kind of like shoddily paced and everything. And then, you know, Travolta, I realized during this exercise that he's my favorite actor. Like, because I get defensive.
That made me so happy.
Because I get defensive about him in ways that I don't get defensive about Costner.
Okay.
Because I think like, with Costner, like, if I'm looking at his filmography, I'm just like, there's probably still, like, 15 of his movies that I haven't seen. But, like, Travolta's the one where I'm just like, I need to see every Travolta movie.
Yeah, right.
So, like, it's kind of like, okay, I got to just face facts. Like, it's Travolta. So, but the experts, like, I think, and that's one thing, is because even though, like, I'm, you know, defensive about him, like, I understand people's criticisms of him. And, like, in certain movies, like Saturday Night Fever or Grease, he's so like effortlessly cool.
Right.
And in The Experts, it's like the expiration date is passed and it's like, but he's still trying to be the coolest guy in the room.
Yeah.
And it's like, he hasn't kind of figured out the next move yet, which is sort of like what he does so well in Look Who's Talking, which is like, oh, I'll be the butt of the joke a little bit.
Right.
But in The Experts, it's like, he's doing the thing that he does in Wild Hogs, where he's supposed to be, like, the baddest ass, but then, like, he's doing, like, weird, like, high fives that look, like, really kind of, like, off, and, like, he's doing, like, spin moves in leather jackets, and it's just like, John, no, this isn't as cool as you think that it is.
Well, the thing about Travolta, and stop me if you think I'm wrong, because, yes, he has played super cool characters.
Yeah.
And seems pretty effortless at it.
Yeah.
But I get the feeling that in real life he's not super cool,
like
that he's
so
kind
either.
Of a dork.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I always took from it, like that he's just kind of this like gentle nice guy, but like when he goes for these, he's a better like inward guy than outsized guy. Like maybe he was cool like that like in his younger days, but for some reason it just doesn't, it's odd, like he and it doesn't help that he's like, you know, doing like kind of like there's one character who's African-American or African-Russian and then like he's like there's a whole joke about like, are you only hiring me because I'm black? And he's like, yes. But then like leading up to that is a bunch of like things where John Travolta's kind of showing like how like hip that he is to like impress this guy.
Right.
And it's just like kind of embarrassing and it doesn't help that, like, Travolta's with the suit that he's wearing and the hair that he's got, he looks like Frankenstein's monster. Like, he would be perfect to play Frankenstein's monster circa 1987. It's really weird. And I say this with love, but, like, it's the worst type of 80s dated clothing and hairstyle.
Well, it tries so hard to be hip and of the moment that it was out of date by the time it came out. I mean, even if it had also been made in 1989, it still would have been out of date by the time it came out because it tries so hard to be so current that the clothing and the hairstyles, it's so hopelessly dated.
This is the type of movie where you expect, like, the end credits just to be, like, freeze frames of scenes that have already happened in the movie, and it says, like, Lorimar Television at
the
end.
I would be totally fine with that, by the way.
So you should watch Lock Up with Sylvester Stallone.
I will.
Yeah, that's what they do, and it's great.
Deborah Foreman's in this movie.
Oh, is
she'll come up again.
Oh, yeah, she plays Ari Gross's love interest.
Until all of a sudden she's not.
Yeah, she's just gone. And they
get revealed to be, like, kind of she sides with the Russians, basically, once they find out what's going on.
I say this not as a joke, but does she say words in this movie?
She says a few words, but not many.
Okay, I don't remember her, like, really.
She doesn't make
a
huge impression.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was the worst of the movies that we watched, right?
I'm checking the list. I will say it's tied for worst.
Oh, shit.
With another one of your Travolta picks.
I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think this is worse than that.
Okay. Fair enough.
Because I'm at least, well, we'll get to it, but I'm at least entertained by the Travolta performance in that as
Okay.
As
I got a good story about that.
Showy as it is, and as I forget what you said earlier, there's no dial or whatever,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's allowed to just go in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So why don't we, so I pick a Cage next, right?
Yes.
Okay.
First, I got to give you
another gift.
Oh, my
God.
Hold on.
Another gift?
Yeah, there's a couple here.
Thanks, man. I just gave you shitty beer.
Oh, that's okay. All right, we have a card. I'm going to give you two at once.
Okay.
Here's your card.
Thank
that's
you.
Just our Christmas card with some pictures in it.
Thank you.
You don't have to, I mean, you can
I will
look at
later.
It now, but yeah. And,
I'll make
your
everybody
next
wait.
Gift.
Jurassic Park metal pin. And it's not Jurassic World or
no,
the Lost World. It's the OG and Eternal stickers. I'm so going to take this to the Disney Plus when I watch this and stick them on my
be
TV.
Be bored by your stickers like you
wait.
Will be by the movie.
I can't wait.
Just ooh. Kidding. Eternals is a masterpiece.
Barry Keoghan sticker.
Feed it spaghetti.
Lay still my beating heart. I love Killing of a Sacred Deer. He's so funny in that movie.
He is.
I don't like it's
but he's
a funny movie.
But he's always a serial killer. Like
but it's
even
a funny
in Eternals.
Movie. It's supposed to be funny, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious.
By the end, when he's yeah. just swinging back and forth, like, how can that be anything but funny?
The little girl's legs are atrophied and she's just dragging herself downstairs. It's great.
It's my favorite of the Yorgos movies.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't dislike The Favorite, but
I didn't dislike it, but I like Killing of a Sacred Deer.
I
better.
Really like Killing of a yeah. Sacred Deer. I remember yeah. seeing that like the second movie on a double feature with the Florida Project, and I'm like, oof. This is a good night, but
yeah.
a dark night.
Yeah, yeah, it's rough.
Yeah,
whatever happened to that girl from the Florida Project?
The little girl?
No, the mom.
Oh, she was in a Drake music video.
That's not helping me.
I don't think she was in anything else. Right. Bria Venati.
Thank you.
I think that's what her name
I
was.
I want to see her in more stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. Although I kind of like, I made a, like an, I did an impression of her once. And now I kind of like feel like I always misremember that she didn't say that it was me who said that. Because it was like, it's like, what are you even talking about even?
That sounds like something she would have said.
Yeah, because it does. She should. Why wasn't she in Zola?
Oh, my gosh.
She's
yeah.
got Zola written all
she
over.
She does. We just rewatched Zola.
I need to rewatch it.
It's really good.
It's really fun. Boogie yeah. also has Taylor Page in it.
Then I might watch Boogie because, yeah. boy, I like Taylor Page.
Taylor Page is the best.
Yeah,
yeah
she's so good in Zola. I was really happy the Chicago Film Critics nominated... Colman Domingo.
Didn't they nominate Riley Keough?
And
also?
Riley Keough
yeah.
from Zola.
Yeah.
But not Taylor Page. I nominated Taylor Page, but apparently yeah. not enough other people did.
Okay.
But two of those three performances got nominations, which I was pretty excited by.
Yeah.
No wins, of course.
Speaking also of misremembering stuff, so like, you know how I do the Defoe lot of fun thing?
Yes.
I almost want him to somehow figure that out. And then, like, say it in a movie.
Yes.
And then it'll be, like, my personal version of, like, Say Hi to Your Mother for
I
Me
like
from,
yeah.
from Mile 22.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That would be great. Yeah.
God, Mile 22.
So good. That'll be next year's holiday show. NC-17 movies and Mile 22.
God. I'm not a fan of
we'll
Mile 22.
We'll call it 17 to 22. Okay, Cage. I will go with the only movie on this list where it was the first time I watched it.
Oh, wow. Okay. You had a first timer
in
this?
I had a first timer in this, and it was Valley Girl.
Oh, okay.
I had never seen Valley
Speaking
Girl.
Speaking of Deborah Foreman, that's why I brought her up.
Whoa, segue.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Take that, Paul Blart. did you see the trailer for his movie where he plays Sean Payton?
No.
It looked bad.
Who's Sean Payton?
He was the coach from the New Orleans Saints who had, like, he got suspended for a year because he had a bounty system. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
It was basically like he would give players on his team bonuses for like maiming and injuring opposing players.
Oh, wow.
And that's a big no-no.
So he's pivoting to drama?
So, no, it's still like, it looks like Little Giants, but it's like
oh,
he's
wow.
playing Sean Payton and it's like he's helping coach his son's peewee team because he can't coach in the NFL because he's suspended and Taylor Lautner's in it.
Oh, Jesus.
He plays one of the little children. I'm just kidding. He doesn't.
Shark boy.
Yeah. yeah. So Valley Girl was, a movie that I almost watched once at the Music Box, but then I went the night where, like, it was some website or, like, a something, like, or podcast, and they were hosting the screening. And it was, like, a double feature of Valley Girl and some other movie, and I can't remember what the other movie was. And I remember when they were introducing it, I was just like, ugh. And then I just, like, got up and left. Like, Patrick knows this. I'm extremely fickle when it comes to, like, most things. So I drove 45 minutes to the Music Box, probably, like, had dinner, like, waited in the theater for, like, 30 minutes, was ready to watch Valley Girl, heard these two people talk, and I was just like, I don't like them, and then got up and left.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So Valley Girl I liked. Didn't love.
Sure.
I think I need to see it maybe another time to kind of get my feelings on it settled.
Okay.
But I thought it was interesting, although I kind of had like whiplash at certain points I felt like it was missing beats or scenes because it's like they're broken up, but I wasn't I'm like, when did they break up?
Yeah.
Or she would feel a certain way about him, but right. Like, I'm just like, but what provoked that really? Like, other than like your friends, but like your friends didn't seem to bother you a second ago.
The second half becomes pretty sloppy.
Yeah. That's more or less kind of, but I thought there was parts like, especially in like the one thing I did like about it is the movie's like 100 minutes. And for like the first 45 minutes, it's like sort of this discovery thing that happens mostly over the span of like a night,
right?
Where it's like he's in the valley because he crashes his party with his friends because he sees Deborah Foreman and her friends on the beach, and like it's just a lot of hanging out at the party.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to the party, and then there's a fight, and then he leaves the party, and then he comes back up, but he goes back to the party because fuck Michael Bowen, because it's a movie, so fuck Michael Bowen. And then he takes Deborah Foreman and one of her friends along with his friend to like this kind of punk club or like new wavy type mm-hmm. club in LA in Hollywood. And I really like that because it's very like I've definitely been in that situation like in high school where you're sort of in a social setting that's kind of outside of your box.
Right.
And like I think the movie really kind of nails like the kind of push pull between I feel uncomfortable, but I'm also like trying to look like I'm super comfortable.
Yeah.
And I really like that. But like you said, I think kind of with like a lot of the plot mechanics of the second half that sort of play out more like a typical like 80s teen movie
right.
with bullies and stuff like that. I thought it was a little less successful, but the soundtrack's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good Cage.
Good. Very good Cage. Yeah.
First starring role for Cage.
First time he was billed as Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. First time. Yeah. No more Coppola.
Yeah.
I'll say something maybe somewhat controversial because okay. I know this movie is beloved by a lot of people. Mm. I think Deborah Foreman, I think her part should have been played by one of the actors who played her friends.
E.G. Daly?
Sure.
Specifically.
Yeah,
okay.
Or Michelle Mayrink, I think, actually could have been super interesting because she's...
Was she the one who played the best friend or the one who had the party?
No, the one who had the party.
Okay,
and she goes on to be in Real Genius, and she's in Permanent Record, and she's in Joy of Sex.
Wasn't Deborah Foreman in Real Genius also?
She has a little cameo about, can you nail a 12-inch board?
Okay.
12-inch nail through a board with your penis or something like that.
And she's in April Fool's Day.
She is,
which it was one of my least favorite horror movies.
Oh, yikes.
No, not playing the game that movie's playing.
I like Deborah Foreman enough, but mm-hmm. she is a little bit bland for me. And I think her friends have a lot more character.
Yeah.
And I would have loved to have seen somebody with a little bit more energy, a little bit more personality, a little bit more edge, swap roles with her.
I
get that she has leading lady energy, but I just would rather have seen someone a little less conventional in that part.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally see that. I was reading like IMDb trivia while I was watching the movie, and it was something like, so she was like 21 when they made this and Cage was 19, and he said like it wasn't hard for him to pretend like he was in love with Deborah Foreman because he kind of like had a crush on her on set. And I think like you can kind of tell, and I think like sometimes that doesn't always translate on film, where like you can tell that the actors are kind of vibing each other, and I felt that way with him, and I thought that was good to feel kind of like a chase element and
right.
it wasn't.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I finally saw it.
Yeah, yeah. Right. As like 80s teen comedies go, it's a good one.
Yeah.
You know, as you said, it captures a certain time and a certain place. And, you know, they don't go very far with the Valley stuff, I don't think. There's like a little bit of Valley speak.
They say totally a lot, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, we get to
the
see
thing.
Them at the
yeah.
mall.
Yeah.
And like, but it doesn't go crazy with it. I thought Frederick Forrest and Colleen Camp were funny as the parents.
Hot moms in this movie.
Hot moms.
Colleen Camp.
Left
is
and right.
Very cute. And then the
Michelle Mayrink's mom.
Michelle Mayrink's mom. That whole thing, like, it almost turns into, like, a dirty movie, like, for one scene. And I'm just kind of like, I'm on board for the dirty movie. Like, I don't want to watch this teen romance anymore. Like, I want to see, like, this problematic situation. I want a little licorice with my pizza right now.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
So, yeah.
And fuck Michael Bowen.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's always the worst.
He is always the worst.
He's very good at being the worst.
Yeah, totally. Like, yeah. The first time I ever saw him in anything was Jackie Brown, so, like, it's been okay. kind of fun, like, going back and seeing him in, like, Night of the Comet
right.
and, like, Valley Girl and stuff. And I just think it's so weird that he was ever a teenager. Like,
yeah.
Like, I feel like he's like entered second grade, like looking like Jack, and he's just straight up an asshole already.
Yeah, even as a teenager, yeah. he's just still the asshole.
Yeah.
Like always.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I will give you your next gift, and then.
Oh my god! You shouldn't have done that. There's too many gifts.
I'll pick a cage.
Okay.
I'll pick one of your cages. Now, after you picked The Punisher, I really should have gone with this cage.
That's fine.
Because there's thematic connections for some of these.
I see what you're saying. Okay, I know where you're going. Yeah.
I should have gone with Kiss of Death.
That was the first movie I watched because I couldn't wait. Like, I've been meaning to rewatch Kiss of Death for a long time.
Oh, here's the next. Well, you already saw what the next gift is, but we'll go with this guy first.
It's Al Pacino.
Here's little Pacino.
It's a Jaws ornament. He's biting the tank, and he looks, like, so happy because he doesn't know what's going to happen. Because
he's
going to
fuck Beverly D'Angelo.
He is. He's, he's just like, I'm going to get electrocuted in the mouth.
I got high spirits.
I got stabbed with an oar by Lorraine Gary. Or a... Not an oar. A bow.
I don't know if I've ever seen Jaws 4.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's better than 3, I think.
I've seen 3.
It's more interesting.
I haven't
seen
3 since I was a kid, and I don't know if I've ever seen 2, to be honest.
Yeah. It's weird, because, like, in order of preference of, like, what would I put on right now, of the Jaws sequels, I would probably watch 4 before I would watch 2 or 3.
Okay.
Because 2, I just think, has... an annoying teenager problem.
Ah.
It's like so Bad News Bears that it's
ugh.
Like, but like in a bad way.
Okay.
It's like Breaking Training, Bad News Bears. that I have a problem with it. And then 3, I was lucky enough to see it in 3D on Blu-ray at JB and Jan's, and that was the way to see it. Like, it was
yeah.
really fun that way.
I'll bet, yeah.
But every other time I've seen it, it's just been hot garbage.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So Kiss of Death.
Yeah.
Comes out in what, 95?
95, yeah. Spring of 95.
And the reason it's sort of thematically connected to The Punisher is because Nicolas Cage is playing the villain in this movie.
Little Junior.
And
yeah.
I remember that being a big deal at the time because he mm-hmm. sort of physically transformed himself in order to play Little Junior.
Yeah. He gets buff. He gets like pre-Cameron Poe buff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I always remember that being like the movie where he gets
right.
ripped. But then, yeah, it was Kiss of Death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was before anybody was considering him to be anything resembling an action hero.
Yeah, he was still the quirky kind of star right. slash character.
Because this is the yeah. same year as Leaving Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's wild.
Yeah.
This is his Oscar-winning year, and he's playing Little Junior in Kiss of Death.
Yeah.
Kiss of Death is fine. Like, mm-hmm. it held my attention. It has an amazingly stacked...
There's
cast.
A lot of good people on it.
And yeah. it's a lot of people who, like, weren't people at the time that mm-hmm. it came out. Philip Baker Hall has, like, 2 scenes, and Philip Baker Hall wasn't really anybody just yet.
Yeah, like, Ving Rhames is billed, like, 7th.
Right.
It's, like, that type of movie.
Right,
yeah.
Even though this is post-Pulp Fiction, but obviously they shot it before
yeah.
Pulp Fiction blew up.
Yeah, it was, like, him and, yeah, Samuel L. Jackson hadn't quite, I mean, he was a star by the time... you know, Kiss of Death and Die Hard with a Vengeance rolled around in 95, but like when they shot it, it was
right.
It was probably like after Pulp Fiction premiered at Cannes, but like before it was released.
Right.
So, yeah.
So there's a ton of people. Rappaport, your boy.
Yeah. Very Rappaporty in this.
Being the most Rappaporty he's ever been in a movie.
Yeah. Helen Hunt having no luck whatsoever.
I can't stand that her last word is Jimmy.
Yeah. Jimmy!
Who has the presence of mind to yell out her husband's name?
I don't know.
Right before she collides with a truck.
What if that was like her way of calling him, and then he just flies down on a cape and Caruso's just like points to the grill of the truck. He's like, fuck you. And then it stops.
Sorry to crash this party.
Yeah. And then this is another one where it's like there's something really icky about like this whole dynamic where
that he marries the sister.
They marries the sister, and like the parents apparently like off screen are like totally okay with this situation.
Right.
It's very weird.
Our one daughter is dead largely because of you, but yeah, you can have a second shot with our other kid.
Have you seen his ginger haircut?
To be fair,
yeah.
The sister is played by Catherine Irby.
Yeah, who I like.
I like too. Yeah. So I understand wanting to marry Catherine Irby once your Helen Hunt dies.
And also, is she playing like a teenager at the beginning? Or is she playing an adult?
No, I think
can
she's
never
playing
tell.
An adult.
Okay, I can't tell.
Be even weirder if she was a teenager.
That's what I'm saying. Like that's why maybe it felt even weirder to me because I thought she was like in high school.
Stanley Tucci is in this. The Tooch
with some hair.
Yeah,
yeah. I have a big like. So I'm like you. Like I think Kiss of Death is maybe a little better than Fine, but like it's I know it's not like exemplary.
Yeah.
Crime filmmaking. It's like
yeah.
It's a single. It's very entertaining to
I think
watch.
It's worth watching for Nicolas Cage. I think it has a problem at the center, which is David Caruso.
That's what I want to talk about, and then I do want to talk about Cage. But, like, Caruso, this is such a weird movie for me because, like, this was obviously the big thing was he left NYPD Blue to become a movie star, and this was his first shot at being a leading actor in a movie. And I think that he pops more in stuff like King of New York or later Proof of Life and stuff. He's like, that's where you're just like, man, this guy could really be a movie star. But for some reason in Kiss of Death, just like this character, I think was such a mistake for him to pick as like the first movie out the gate, because it's almost like by design that he's like kind of like the least powerful person in any situation.
Yeah.
So like, it's almost like he's kind of at the mercy of like every other star or actor. And he kind of seems like lower status as a result of it. So he comes off as kind of wan for like this lead, like that he's in over his head almost. And that's more just like how the character is, but
which could be interesting if he was then like outsmarting everyone and always sort of behind the eight ball and trying to get himself out, but like he's so low energy and like so sleepy.
Yeah, it's like I think he's kind of going for like a smoldering thing, but it like it doesn't. And I've seen that work in like other stuff that he's done, but like in this, he, like you say, it just comes across as sort of disinterested or sleepy or like grumpy.
Grumpy is another word for it. My introduction to him was Mad Dog and Glory, and I remember him being like fucking electric in that movie.
Yeah.
I remember being like, who is that guy?
That's like when I saw Proof of Life at the Union, and
I've
remember,
seen Proof of Life, I don't remember.
And it is a bore and a half. Like it
I
is,
don't even remember him being in it.
It is awful. And then like an hour and 45 minutes or whatever into the movie, he joins up with like Russell Crowe as like a commando unit to like save David Morse's character.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, it's like having the Roadrunner enter your movie like 105 minutes in. I'm just like, where was this the rest of the movie?
Yeah.
He's amazing in this.
Okay.
And like, I know he's got it in him. And like, I think he's like a really, I didn't like Session 9 particularly, but I think like he's magnetic, like he's somebody that like you're always paying attention to. It's just weird because like in Kiss of Death, it's just like if it was like a boxing match between actors, he's getting knocked out by Samuel L. Jackson in this scene, by Nicolas Cage in this scene, by Ving Rhames in this scene, by fucking Michael Rappaport in this scene. Like it's just everybody's just dunking on him.
Is he better in Jade? It's been so long since I saw Jade.
He's very much of the piece with Jade. Like he's the right kind of Douglas, like Michael Douglas sleaze. Like I really like it.
Fuck, and, I need to see Jade again.
Yeah, well, we could stretch and do that for the NC-17 show.
if we can get our hands on the NC-17 version.
Oh, man. From your lips to God's ears.
Yeah. Come on, Friedkin.
Come on, Billy.
Put it out on Blu-ray.
Let your Fried flag fly. Sorry. I think Nicolas Cage in the movie is... you could tell it's like a performance that he's giving where he's like amused with his choices.
Yep.
But there's stuff in it. I don't think it really works for the movie because I think he's supposed to be so menacing, but he just comes across as like a really dumb, like enforcer more than like a criminal mass. And I think that's to the point of the movie.
Yeah. I think he's
fun.
I think he's scary in that he's unpredictable.
Yeah.
Because he's stupid.
Yeah. But I do like...
He's not a smart criminal.
So this is the second of the Nicolas Cage... There's two Nicolas Cage movies on this list where Hope Davis is his significant other. And I much prefer her in this where she's just getting bench pressed by Nicolas Cage.
I just thought it was so funny when I put the weatherman on and I was like, that's right. Holy shit. He was benching her in Kiss of Death. That's like how she's introduced in that movie.
She had like an interesting early career. She's travel agent in Home Alone, getting bench pressed by like Fox took care of her.
And there's 5 years between those movies where she's like trying to get work and she hasn't given up. And then around this time, she does Next Stop Wonderland. And is that kind of her breakthrough?
I like when Lauren Dean bench presses her in Mumford.
I love Mumford.
Yeah, I know you do.
Mumford's so good. Everyone benches her in Mumford. That's what that movie's about.
Yeah,
Ted Danson benches her at one time.
Why don't people get benched?
A motherfucker.
Why don't people get benched more in movies?
I don't know. That's one thing the Kiss of Death has going for it is that Nicolas Cage bench presses Hope Davis.
Yeah, and I do like I kind of have a weakness for like these gangster movies where there's really no romanticism to any of it, and it's like they just all hang out at this horrible strip club that's like neon soaked and it looks like the Flamingo or something. It's just stupid. I don't know. Yeah, this is like, you know, it's a 1995 April movie directed by Barbie Schroeder. It's like it tells you what it is right up front.
I have not seen the film on which this is based.
I haven't either. Yeah.
It's a remake of is it 47?
Sounds right.
Yeah, 1947 film noir classic.
Nice.
But I've not seen it. I've only seen, and it has been years since I saw it. So I probably rented it on VHS when it came out in like 95 or 96. Mm. Haven't seen it until this episode.
I was worried that I wasn't going to be able to find it, and then it was on Stars, luckily. So I subscribed to Stars, which was a good idea, because Stars is like, it's like HBO Max.
Really?
There's just tons of stuff on
there.
No
kidding.
Yeah.
I bought a used DVD about a year ago when I was collecting some Cages and hadn't watched it, so it came in handy that it was sitting there on the shelf.
Nice.
Ready for me to enjoy.
This is another movie where I was just like, wow, this got to the dollar theater really fast. Because I remember
this
it was like
made for the dollar theater.
I remember it was like it came out in late April and then like by my birthday it was in May.
Shit.
It was like already at the dollar theater. But that weekend, I don't know why I remember these things, but that weekend I was just like looking at Barrington Square and I'm just like, whoa, wait. You got like Pulp Fiction, you got Kiss of Death, you've got like, and there was like four other movies. And I'm like, why'd you, it's like this weekend, it's like, like No Way Home, Nightmare Alley, Matrix. It's just like, what's going on? But it was like Barrington Square.
It definitely is one of those movies, and Nicolas Cage was doing this a lot, like late 80s, early 90s, where like he has an idea for what he's going to do for this performance. It's why he takes a role.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, because I can do this time around.
Yeah.
And in this one, it's like, I'm going to grow a goatee and pump myself up and be the heavy in a movie, which I've never done really before or since.
Yeah. And if you're on board for, like, just a guy, like, doing random shit in a movie, like, there's a lot to like. Like, I just keep thinking about, like, Philip Baker Hall dies and they show Cage grieving and he's just jumping up and down in place and then punches a guy in the face and then they like cut to the next scene. It's really weird, but like kind of great.
Yeah. So, I'm liking it more the more we talk about it because I'm remembering all the Cage stuff. Just
it was better than I remembered it being, but I think more, I think I'm more like, I kind of have like my dial tuned to kind of junk cinema more than I used to.
Okay.
Like now I kind of gravitate towards stuff like that. So,
got it.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so probably So, Bubby, how do you think the show is going so far?
Oh, Bubby.
She looks very much like Martin Scorsese's mom in Goodfellas.
She does.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bubby.
Yeah. Bubby, you hang out with Santa Chucky.
You've given me the energy. Yeah. I knew Chucky Claus had to come back for this holiday show because he's a staple of this episode.
Have you heard of Elf on a Shelf?
I have.
Did you know that there's a Keegan on your beer can?
I did not.
He's the new Elf on the Shelf.
Fistmas.
Brewed only in Chicago.
Made by those crazy cats at Revolution Brewing. Okay,
all right,
so
your pick next.
Travolta, let's go with From Paris with Love, which was a Patrick choice.
Not because I was being an asshole, but because I wanted to revisit it. I hadn't seen it since the theater.
Mm-hmm.
I owned it.
Can I tell a fun story about From Paris
100%
with Love?
You can.
So around the time of The Fanatic, Travolta was doing a lot of press, and because he was talking about, like, you know, interacting with fans and everything like that. And also it was kind of sort of like a performance where, like, you can sort of reflect on, like, your legacy as an actor and things like that because of Devon Sawa's character, whatever. So I remember Travolta was doing an interview with Richard Roper. And Roper kind of teed him up, and he's just like, hey, if you could go back, I know you've gone back and redone, like, you've revisited Chili Palmer. If you could go back to any of your iconic characters, who would you choose? And he, Travolta takes a beat, and he just goes, Charlie Wax. And I'm just like, bravo, sir.
Hey, this is, like, why you gotta love Travolta.
Yeah. Like, he's just like, there's a lot of, like, Tony Manero, who? Vincent Vega, what? Charlie Wax, give me some more.
Like Kiss of Death.
Yeah.
Charlie Wax, Travolta, like Cage and Kiss of Death, Charlie Wax is the only thing worth watching in From Paris with Love.
Yeah, because I'm not a big Jonathan Rhys Meyers guy.
I like him in Velvet Goldmine. I can't think of
him
when.
I liked him in Match Point.
Yeah, I guess
he's kind of a weasel.
I kind of forgot he was in that. Yeah, he was all right in that. But yeah, he's not going to carry an action movie for me. That's for goddamn sure.
He'll carry a vase of cocaine for 40 minutes, which I could not believe. That was another one where I'm just like, just put it down. Just put it down.
No.
But this is during, like, the whole Europa Corp era. With, like, Costner fell victim to this, too, where they're just like, let's get these American superstars, get them to Europe, give them a scratchy voice and a scarf and guns and let them go. Because, like, Costner's was 3 days to Kill, which
I did not like.
I think is worse than this one.
I would agree with that.
From Paris with Love is just, like, Travolta turned up to, like, 12.
Yes.
And, again, I think is kind of falls prey to him thinking that he's cooler than he's coming across on screen.
Yeah, I agree. But again, at least he has some energy.
Yeah.
He seems to be having a good time.
He kind of looks like Luke Hobbs in this one.
Got his head shaved for the first time.
Head shaved. He's like way too bulky.
Got the goatee.
Yeah.
Like Cage and Kiss of Death.
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked seeing him do an action movie where he's not the villain.
True.
Because he doesn't have very many. Usually when he's in an action movie, Swordfish, Broken Arrow, Face Off, Punisher, he's the villain.
Yep.
So it's fun to see him enjoying himself on screen. The movie is not great. It's directed by Pierre Morel, who right after Taken. And he's not the reason that Taken was a success.
No.
Like,
no.
Liam Neeson and the premise is the reason that Taken was a success, because Pierre Morel, it does fine. It's not like it's a badly directed movie.
Yeah.
It's just not very good.
I can't believe January 2009 at all, because it was, like, out of nowhere, Taken and Paul Blart Mall Cop make, like, over $100 million.
Yep.
And it was kind of like, is this just because of the recession and this is the only form of entertainment people can afford right now?
Maybe.
Or what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot Paul Blart made over $100 million.
It was a huge hit, yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy.
The sight of Kevin James on a Segway was enough to just pack him into the theater.
There's one laugh out loud moment in Paul Blart Mall
Cop.
What
is it?
where he's playing possum and he's in a goaltender's outfit. And then he just like in a one of the terrorists is sneaking around and Paul Blart just opens his eyes real wide and it looks like Jason Voorhees. And then he takes the guy down. And that's funny. But like, I don't know why I did that digression.
It's fine.
It's fine.
We need to talk about Paul Blart.
This is a short show, so I think it's fine for us to kind of go on digressions like that.
Yeah, I don't totally know what to say about From Paris with Love, yeah. Except that I was like, this is sort of out of step with most of Travolta's filmography.
Yeah.
It was a movie I felt like revisiting. I don't think it's like the worst movie. I think The Experts is worse than this movie.
The more that I think about it, yeah, The Experts is worse than this. Yeah. I think I just kind of go to sometimes where like his performance makes me a little uncomfortable. And then also the Royale with cheese thing is real bad.
Real bad.
Yeah. I don't like that. So if you're going to do like self-reflexive stuff from your own career, you got to be real subtle.
And you have to have like Tarantino's permission.
I'm sure he got it. Sometimes I wonder like how the relationship is between the two of them.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't been in any of the other movies, which is doesn't necessarily mean anything because neither is like Pam Grier or anybody like that.
Right.
But I think that Travolta trades on kind of Pulp Fiction enough where I wonder if like he's like, hey, why wasn't I invited back to the party at some point? And like, what does Tarantino, like, I would love to see an interview of Tarantino just running through Travolta's back half of his career and saying like what he thinks of it, because I think he was like kind of thrilled that he had that little brief period of time after Pulp Fiction where he was kind of the guy again and he was making choices like Chili Palmer and things like that and John Woo movies and stuff. But I would wonder, you know, later what he thinks of some of the choices.
What does Travolta have coming up while we're on the subject?
Nothing really. It's just that DTV with Bruce Willis, Paradise City, directed by Chuck Russell and co-starring him and Stephen Dorff.
It's on the
Willis pipeline. So, I mean, like, I'm sure by April or
May. It can't come out soon enough.
Yeah. I'm very excited.
So am I.
Because one thing I will say is, if there's another star of that caliber in a movie with Willis, I think Willis will try a little bit more than he usually does. That might be overstating it, but like, I think that since the two of them go way back, judging by, because I've been listening to Haleywood, which is like a podcast about Bruce Willis.
And I haven't
like
heard it yet, but Haley, I know Idaho, talking about it.
And like him and Travolta, at least at the time, were friends. They would like go on vacations together
kidding.
Like that. Like him and his Kelly Preston and Demi Moore and stuff. So I wonder if like for Paradise City, he's like, hey, you know, like John's here. We've done Look Who's Talking. We've done Pulp Fiction. Those were pleasant experiences. I'll not phone it in. I'll give you like a glass effort. So we'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I want to see that movie. We'll do a show on it when it comes out.
Yeah, boy.
Anything else about From Paris with Love or should we move on?
I think we can move on.
All right. Let's move on to these Venom headphones.
Oh my god.
So now you can listen to the Eminem Venom song in your Venom headphones.
Can Venom talk to me through the headphones?
Of course.
Good.
Eddie, this Q-dope is closed. Sorry, they're not beats somewhere else. Sorry, they're not beats, Eddie. Let's watch Manchester by the Sea. Rewind this part.
Why? It's when the house sets on fire.
I like it. Who do you think set it on fire? It was me, Eddie.
I love it. Yeah. I love foldable design.
Yeah.
High quality sound.
For watching movies on airplanes. Aww. I just want you to wear Venom headphones on an airplane filled with strangers.
Yeah. I bet you like most people on the plane will be really happy with me because it was the third highest grossing movie of this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all Marvel.
Yeah.
The top five, I think. I mean,
F9, I think, was five. But Black Widow, Shang-Chi,
Spider-Man,
Shang-Chi,
Venom.
Watch Morbius will gross like $300 million.
I mean, it looks so good.
Looks great.
I can't wait for it.
Yeah. I was kind of happy to see Tyrese in it because I'm just like, this is such a movie that Tyrese should be in. Yeah. So good for him.
Eesh.
But,
eesh. Eesh. All right. Am I picking a cage now?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll pick one of my cages and I'll go with It Could Happen to You.
Okay.
From 1994.
Mm-hmm.
Co-starring Bridget Fonda and Rosie Perez.
Correct.
We got a visitor. We have
from the North Pole.
A visitor from the North
goodness.
Pole.
Hey, how you
Here
doing?
Oh my gosh, that T-shirt.
There's,
yeah,
one, for
there's
you.
One for you.
Adam made F This Movie Christmas shirts.
That's why I asked you for shirt sizes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That instead of this fashionable sweatshirt that I'm wearing right now.
Oh, a promotional Tick Tick Boom sweatshirt.
Nice. Awesome.
These are some F This Movie cinnamon rolls.
Aw,
thank you.
Baked by our friends of Echoes.
This looks amazing. Thank,
thank
you very much.
No, there's plenty, baby.
Yeah, we won't eat them all, Rosie, we promise.
Happy holidays at this movie.
I'm having one tomorrow morning.
Okay, come say happy holidays on
the
mic,
Rosie.
Happy holidays.
You sound like Venom.
Now say Eddie in that voice.
Eddie.
That's good. You sound like Louis Armstrong, too.
Happy holidays. Aww,
thank you, honey.
Oh, you're so wonderful. You give your booby such nuts.
This show is a complete free-for-all.
Papa Pig does not like the snotty talk.
All right.
Snotty talk.
Whoa. Snotty talk. Directed by Andrew Bergman.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage is a cop. Bridget Fonda is a waitress. He doesn't have enough money to tip her one day, so he makes a deal with her. If he wins the lottery, he will come back and give her half his winnings.
Yep.
He wins $2 million, $4
million,
$4 million in the lottery.
Gives her $2 million.
Gives her $2 million. And Rosie
Cop
Perez.
Gives waitress $2 million tip, says not, every newspaper.
Is not happy and says, why don't you give her all the money?
Billy!
Billy!
What are you doing? We got to pay off the Stoogies.
Give her all the money, Billy. I'm going to be on Jeopardy, Billy.
I'm going to be on Wheel of Fortune this time. Billy! I'm going to date Seymour Cassell.
I remember Gene Siskel, to bring him up again, being upset that they changed the original title of this movie because it was originally called Cop Tips Waitress 2 Million, which I think is a bad title. I recognize that It Could Happen to You is not
a
great title. It's very generic.
Yeah.
And meaningless. But
it happened to all of us.
But Cop Tips Waitress 2 Million is not a good title for a romantic comedy.
I like how when you get older, you realize that maybe everything Siskel and Ebert didn't say is the gospel. And sometimes it's kind of like, really? But
I
like,
knew it at the time when he was saying, like, they should have called it Cop Tips Waitress 2 Million. Like, no.
I don't know. I just
have.
I like it because it just shows that they're human. So I appreciate it. But I saw It Could Happen to You once on a bus trip, like a Greyhound bus, on my way to camp.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that was, I think, that was when I had, like, my first official girlfriend was from that trip.
Oh, wow. A bus girlfriend.
I remember, like, yeah, it was very exciting. And, like, I remember watching It Could Happen to You on the way there. And then getting the girlfriend, like, during camp.
Ooh.
And I'm just like, if only she was my girlfriend while we were driving there, we could have watched we could have had, like, a movie date.
Right.
But I remember, like, thinking the movie was kind of, I was, like, 12, so I was just like, it was in one ear out the other.
Mm.
This time when I rewatched it, super charming.
Yes.
Very old-fashioned in a good way.
Yes.
Definitely feels like a TCM type of movie if it was in black and white and made in the 50s.
Right.
And I mean, like, Nicolas Cage kind of went through a brief period, like, in the early 90s where he did, like, this, Honeymoon in Vegas, Guarding Tess, where he was kind of, like, in light comedies. And I think it's such, like, a good look for him. Like, he's just very, he's never, like, going for the joke, but he's very funny.
Yeah.
And him and Bridget Fonda are just adorable together.
So good.
Yeah.
Neither one of them is very funny. Like, no. Rosie Perez, I think, is doing most of the comic heavy lifting in the movie, but yeah. the movie itself isn't, like, hysterically funny. And it's really funny to think that, like, Nicolas Cage just playing textbook nice guy, mm-hmm. decency, this year and the next year he's doing Leaving Las Vegas and Kiss of Death,
yeah,
which are about as far from Charlie the Cop as one could get.
Except he bench presses Rosie Perez and then he leg lifts Bridget Fonda.
Yeah, just I'm a huge fan of this movie. I've been a big fan since I saw it in 94 with, like, my mom at the Dollar Theater. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was more so, like, because of my crush on Bridget Fonda. And now it's, of course, my crush on Nicolas Cage that gets me through the movie. But, yeah, they're both terrific together. We were texting that we wish Bridget Fonda hadn't retired from acting because mm-hmm. she's a natural resource in movies like this.
Yeah. She's on that in that room with Cameron Diaz. And mm-hmm. then who's that other guy who retired that we were talking about?
Oh, Christian from For Love or Money.
Exactly. They're all just having a great time. They just ordered another side of, like, scallops. I don't know. Is that what Hollywood act big shots
do? Of course. They're crazy for scallops.
They order scallops.
Oh, my gosh.
I was on a business trip once, and this guy from the East Coast, he's just like, what? He's like, Adam, we should get the scallops. And I was just like, oh, God, get me the fuck out of this dinner. I'm not ready to be an adult. We're having scallops.
Turns out it was just a Dan in real life family reunion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the only thing I don't like about It Could Happen to You is just I wish that...
Careful.
I wish that Rosie Perez wasn't 100% pill all the time. I wish there was something to her that, mm-hmm. like, was redeemable. But, like, I guess that makes it easier that, like, they split, but then she's so nasty, like, with the settlement at the end and everything. I just wish there was a little bit more of, like, a three-dimensional person.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
The Tooch shows up in this one.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one of the fun things about watching all these movies in close proximity is you see all these connections of actors who show up in different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes being bench-pressed by Nicolas Cage, sometimes just playing opposite him. They don't share any scenes in this movie.
No.
They don't share any scenes in Kiss of Death, do they?
Not like a note.
Most of Tooch's scenes in Kiss of Death are with David Caruso.
Yeah, or Jackson.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right, right, right.
Yeah. But It Could Happen to You. It's good stuff.
I like it.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
Summer 94. That was a good summer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was Speed Summer, right?
Speed Summer. Yeah. Lion King Summer.
Eh.
Forrest Gump Summer.
Lion King's fine. I mean, I'm not a Lion King
Clear
guy,
and Present Summer.
Clear and Present Summer, I saw.
In the Army Summer.
I saw In the Army. Theatrically.
Andre Summer.
Didn't see Andre, though.
Karina Summer.
Didn't see that either. What if Ray Liotta was my new Nicolas Cage? I remember the Flintstones. That was not
The Crow
great.
Summer. The Endless Summer Summer. Wolf Summer.
Indian Summer Summer?
That was 93.
Oh, damn it. Wolf was 94.
Wolf was 94. Wow. Wolf was like, it came out the day that the O.J. chase happened.
Oh, shit.
I remember that.
I saw Wolf with my mom, too.
City Slickers, The Legend of Curly's Gold Summer.
Never saw it.
That was one of my rentals that I got for buying Jurassic Park on VHS from Blockbuster. Because the thing was, like, if you pre-order it for $30... you get, like, a dinosaur poster and a coupon book of 10 free rentals. And I remember City Slickers 2 was one of them and being, like, really upset.
Wasn't worth it.
It was not good.
No, I'm sorry.
No.
Son of a bitch.
all right. So next, I pick a Cage or a Travolta?
I can't remember.
I can't either.
I think a Cage.
Okay. All right. I will go with The Weatherman.
Okay. Speaking of Hope Davis.
Yeah. Wow. We only have like two Cages left, I guess.
All right.
Yeah. Well, not we bad. Have been recording for like 8 hours. So that's all right. The Weatherman is, I saw it in theaters. I remember kind of not knowing what to make of it because it's a way darker movie than the trailers kind of let on. The trailers were sort of like playing up like,
people throw food at him.
People throw food at him. Which
you think
is
that's
going to
be the whole movie.
Yeah, but you think it's going to be the whole movie.
Or that it's going to be a falling down movie where he like starts carrying a bow and arrow.
See, I kept thinking it was going to be like when John Ritter did Skin Deep or something like that, where it was just going to be like, this guy's incorrigible. But like, and he kind of is, but it's just like the way that where the weatherman lands sort of just is you suck and you're better. Everybody's better off when you're away. And like the great American dream is for you to have no talent or interest in what you're doing and yet make tons of money. Mm-hmm. And it's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real like bitter kind of acidic dramedy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to I still don't know what to make of it. I don't dislike it, but I don't know if I like it.
The fact that it got made, I love it.
Okay.
The fact that it got made at all is a miracle. And again, a testament to the star power of Nicolas Cage at the time, probably riding off of National Treasure.
Yeah.
And B, Gore Verbinski cashing his pirate's check.
Right.
And saying like, well, I'd like to make this weird little character piece, this existential crisis movie about a weatherman.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, like, what the hell could audiences have possibly thought of this movie?
There's, like, pedophile stuff in it.
Yeah.
There's, like, people dying of, you know, illness.
Yeah.
A divorce.
Yeah.
Philandering.
Yeah.
Just, like, yeah. It's weird. But there's one thing in the movie. There's two things in the movie that's always stuck with me. Like, even though I only saw it once in 05, I still remembered it, like, clear as day. One was that he plays Like a Rock by Bob Seger, and they sit in the car and they're talking about it. And I think that's a really good scene.
It's an amazing scene and could have been such a cheap joke.
Mm.
Because the song itself is kind of corny and like, haha, isn't it funny
that car commercials.
Right. Yeah. Isn't it funny that we're playing Like a Rock and isn't that so corny and inappropriate for this moment?
Mm-hmm.
But then it turns into this like beautiful scene.
Yeah. And then the other one was whenever I'm walking around with barely any money in my wallet, it's just like, you're a grown man. You can't walk around with $2.
You bought the coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just like, where's my paper? Oh, God.
Didn't have enough.
Yeah.
He bought the coffee. Well, yeah. I mean, just the way that he fucks up, it's so, like,
relatable
and relatable.
Yeah.
The fucking monologue that he has, his interior monologue when he's trying not to forget the tartar sauce.
Oh, yeah.
And he just randomly is like, I wish I had two dicks. It's so, all the stream of consciousness stuff is so fucking funny.
Yeah.
And then just trying to get out of it by saying, like, oh, they were out of tartar sauce. And Hope Davis immediately calling him out. Like, I'm going to call them.
Yeah. Oh,
man. It's really dark. And I think...
like when he slaps Michael Rispoli with his glove. And then he's just like, I don't know why I did that. It's like it's like all these little things where he's just like, he just doesn't think. It's
right,
just like,
right.
Yeah, that's his big, you know, cardinal sin is just...
Right.
He's just so clueless.
Right.
No.
And I mean, his two biggest contributions are when he beats up Gil Bellows.
Yeah.
And when he moves to New York.
Yeah.
Like, that's how he, mm-hmm. like you said, like, things are better when you're gone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's such an unconventional movie. And again, you know, we lament the fact that movies like this don't exist anymore all the time. But,
right.
like, yeah, it's such a bummer that we will not see movies like this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always much more... If you gave me a choice of, like, a plot-driven movie or a character study, I'd take a character study any day of the week. And, like, this is... I mean, it's the thing that makes me want to come back to it is because I'm just like, this is such a specific guy. And...
Dave Spritz.
Yeah, it's very, yeah. What was the thing called? The Spritz Fritz or something like that?
Shoot.
But like you said, like, it's so relatable where he's like not trying to be an asshole, but it's like he's just has like no interest in his job and like doesn't want to play the game of being like the charitable, cheerful, like local celebrity thing.
Right.
He's like, I love how he's just like, I'm just a guy standing in line. And it's just like, you're an asshole. And it's like, yeah, it's so relatable. It's like such an
idea that all he does is read the weather. He doesn't predict it. He wishes he knew more about it. He's like trying to better himself, but then he quickly gives up on that because it's like, I don't know. It's all just fucking wind. Like, you can't predict any of it. It's such this great metaphor for like who he is as a person. I just think it's such an interesting movie. And the one thing I don't like about it is the Hans Zimmer score, which I think is a little too like bouncy and on the nose. But
yeah, was that kind of like an antecedent of like the American Beauty type of thing still?
Probably.
All right.
Weatherman, baby.
Weatherman.
So now I pick a Travolta, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So Travolta, I will pick one of yours.
Okay.
Which means I'm picking Phenomenon. Something like a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Haven't seen this one since, what was it, 95?
96.
96.
Same weekend as Independence Day.
Ooh.
A rare case where it was counter-programming and it still grossed almost $100 million.
Yeah,
that just
success.
Kind of shows what a star Travolta was in 96.
And this, I think... It's a good vehicle for Travolta.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But I'm not crazy about the movie.
I can see that. Yeah.
He's just this small town, aw shucks, normal guy who gets hit by a bolt of something one night and suddenly develops mysterious, not powers. I mean,
he can activate more of his brain than a normal person.
Right. Yeah. Which can lead to telekinesis and some other stuff, which... Mm-hmm. And my problem with this, I've deliberately avoided Awakenings my entire life because I don't want to watch the movie where, like, I've avoided Flowers for Algernon. I mean, I read it, but I've never seen the movie Charlie.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to watch somebody, like, get better.
You're saying is thank you for picking this.
And then have it taken away from them. Like, Awakenings, he goes back to his vegetative state. Charlie... He slowly loses his super intelligence in this movie. Spoilers for Phenomenon. Like, it's revealed that he has a tumor and it's going to kill him.
Which I think is the movie's cardinal mistake.
Yeah.
Because I think that if you said it was something otherworldly and we just don't know what it is, it makes for a more interesting movie. Because if it's just the terminal illness thing... I think it has to become the terminal illness movie in the last act, where the thing that I find the most interesting about him in this movie is there's two things. One is I love the way he chooses to play being more intelligent, which is just this like insatiable thirst to talk to people about like things that he's got. It's like he's got so many ideas and they're just like spilling over and it's like he can't. Like get them out quick enough, and I find that really interesting, and like just kind of his giddiness at like learning and just kind of knowledge in general. It's not like he's being completely morose about it,
right?
And he's wanting to be like charitable with what he knows. Like he wants people to like benefit from
trying to better the town,
exactly,
and make people's lives easier,
exactly. And then I do appreciate kind of this was sort of. I mean, I saying it's ahead of its time is maybe giving it too much credit, but like it's smart in the way that it knows people will be intimidated by intelligence and will do whatever. Like I don't remember where I heard this, but recently I heard something where it was like nobody will ever put you down who's like a higher status than you for like what you're trying to achieve. It's always people who like are below you who like. Don't even dare to do that or are the ones who are going to drag you down.
Okay.
And I thought that was smart because it's just like these characters here. It's like because you're no longer the non-curious kind of simple guy.
Right.
We're going to just do whatever we can to kind of like drag you down and show that you don't belong here anymore and stuff like that.
I appreciate too how he chooses to play his character. I'm sorry, George. Yep. I couldn't think of his name.
George Malley.
Before he gets hit by the thing from the sky, he's not playing like Mr. Simpleton. He's not playing like, aw shucks, dumb. he's just a normal, he's just John Travolta, right. You know, and then when he gets hit with the thing, then he's like a more thinking John Travolta, but he doesn't like become hyper intellectual or like, he's still the same guy.
Mm.
And the idea that this is almost like a curse is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Because he has so many ideas, he can't get them out fast enough, and he's like not sleeping, and he's because he is just possessed with so much knowledge, and he's trying to get it all out. There's some really interesting stuff. I just think maybe John Turteltaub is like such a soft director,
yeah,
and he turns this into such a like a schmaltzy kind of a thing.
It definitely is a schmaltzy thing. I think the movie kind of is the most alive in the scenes with him and Duvall. I like their, and that's true of another movie we're going to talk about. Like,
yeah, it is.
I like their interplay. And one of the things I was mentioning is like, I appreciate sometimes more when Travolta isn't the biggest personality in the movie. Mm-hmm. He's got somebody else. And Duvall, I think, is more than happy to kind of like bite into a role, like in like shake it in its mouth like he's a dog with a
like
chew
he's Al Pacino
toy.
With a stick.
Exactly. Less so in Phenomenon, more so in A Civil Action, where yeah. like I've never seen an actor more amused with himself than Robert Duvall in A Civil Action. Spoilers for what we're going to talk about soon. I don't know. There's stuff in Phenomenon that like I'm not proud of, like the fact that I'm such an easy lay for like schmaltz like this, but It makes me cry every time, like, yeah. they're doing the whole pan in the bar and, like, you kind of see this, like, wake of, you know, a guy who, and it's kind of in, like, sort of a bitter way because it's these guys who turned their back on him and when he was alive, but now kind of with hindsight are like, oh, no, he was, like, a really terrific guy.
Yeah.
And, like, we lost a lot.
Yeah.
Because, and that's one thing I also appreciate, too, is because I think the movie values intellect, but I think it even more so values what a sweet guy that he was.
Right.
And
right.
that's, like, paramount of what is important.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's such a good vehicle for Travolta, because he does that so effortlessly.
Yeah. I think he's best when he's playing, like, up the sweetness with edge around it.
Okay.
Like, when he's kind of, you know, like, at heart, like, just a good-natured, good person.
Yeah.
But then, like, he can kind of have, like, temperament or, like...
Temperament.
You know what I mean.
The only person with worse luck than Helen Hunt...
Yeah.
Kira Sedgwick in Phenomenon, because she spends the entire movie resisting John Travolta's advances, finally sort of succumbs and is like, okay, fine, I'm in love with you. What's that? Oh, you're dying.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's rough.
Well, she should have waited so long.
I guess. I wish we could have seen more of them together before the movie decides to pull them apart.
Yeah. Also a reunion with John Travolta and the kid from Look Who's Talking Now.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the kid who becomes Drugs Are Bad in Super 8, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's who I thought that kid was. He's like a Seventh Heaven kid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So my next pick, I think, let's see, we've got two Travoltas and I think just one Cage left.
So is that right?
So okay. I'll pick a Travolta.
Okay.
Civil Action.
Yeah.
So I think, so A Civil Action runs 113 minutes, I think, and I think like 90 minutes of it cook, and I think 23 minutes of it fizzle out.
Is it the last 23 minutes?
Correct.
Okay.
I think once they have the settlements.
Yes, I agree with this.
I think the movie collapses in a way that bums me out because it's so smart and interesting, and it's such a specific take on a lawyer movie that I haven't seen before, which is Law Office as a Business.
Right.
And I like that it kind of dodges a lot of, because of he plays an ambulance chaser, personal injury attorney named Jan Schlichtman, who's based on a real life person. But the thing that I find so interesting about it is he's got this voiceover monologue at one point in the movie where he says, you know, me caring about my clients is detrimental to them.
Right.
Like they don't like, I should, it's a disservice if you're a lawyer and you're, you know, banking or you're falling too far into the sentiment of the tragedy that surrounds your client. You need to be viewing it as kind of objectively as possible. And it's interesting because he's saying without saying that, like, you might be motivated by, like, in Kathleen Quinlan's case, she just wants an apology. But with him, it's like he's going to be better at his job if he's trying to chase money.
Right.
And that's how the whole first 90 minutes of the movie is it's very much about, like, how much debt are we taking on to try this case? How much do researchers cost? How much does staff cost? How much credit are we in? Things like that. So I really loved all of that. I don't think that it works as well as a lawyer having a crisis of conscience type movie.
Which I don't think they overplay.
Yeah. I think they almost underdo it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I saw this, what year did it come out, 98?
Yeah, the end of 98.
Okay. So he did this and Primary Colors in the same year?
Yeah, good year.
Good year for Travolta.
Yep.
Maybe his last best year?
Maybe his last, like, prime year of hits and still good performances.
Because by 2000, he's doing Battlefield Earth.
Correct. Yeah, well, he had General's Daughter in 99.
No, that
doesn't
count.
Which is not very good.
That doesn't count. That's not a movie that exists. So we saw this, like, my friend group, which would include, like, Erica and Doug and whoever else, in 98 at the AMC, like, in the big theater.
Okay.
Because it was a new movie and because we just went to everything. But I remember at the time, this isn't a movie that, like, 20-year-olds were going to.
Right.
And it felt dry to me and it felt, like, procedural. And I was like, I recognize that it's probably good, but I'm not into it. And
it's
I haven't
about,
seen
like,
it.
Poisoned water. I right. mean, like, it's, yeah.
Which Steven Soderbergh figures out a way to make sexy, like, 2 years later, both literally and figuratively, right? By replacing Travolta with a cleavage-bearing Julia Roberts.
Correct, yeah.
But also, like...
I like cleavage. Yep.
He kind of dresses the whole thing up and makes it so that Aaron Brockovich is a big hit and is nominated for Oscars. And, you know, he kind of found it kind of dry, kind of standoffish. Hadn't seen it since then. And I watch it now and I'm just like, oh, my God, I would kill for a movie like this.
Totally,
like, didn't appreciate what I had in 1998. Because, again, we're talking about this insanely stacked cast. We're talking about a movie that's about adults having conversations and interesting dialogue, and it's really smart, and it's all
like
these
all about
things
like
that
gamesmanship,
right? It's all
like
these
that.
Things
yeah.
that movies aren't anymore.
Yeah.
You know, even Robert Duvall's performance, as self-satisfied as it may be,
I still say that I still like it. Even though I'm saying that,
You know, it's very depressing and frustrating when he sort of says, like, my prediction is. They'll go to trial, we won't, or whatever he says. And he's 100% right.
Yeah.
There's a cynicism in that, that, like, the movie fan in me, like, wants him to be punished and wants him to pay, and you know, but of course not. The real world doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I like the fact that he's such a... Because he, you know, some movies will... Well, I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily novel how they... portray him as a lawyer where he's the quirky but brilliant lawyer.
Right.
But I do appreciate that he's to a purpose annoying. Like,
right.
Like that's his kind of sneak attack, which is just to pretend like he's not paying attention.
Right.
And like drive you crazy by throwing a ball against a wall while he's on the phone with you and stuff like that. But he's always like a chess player who's like three steps ahead of you.
Right.
And the thing that I do like about it is, you know, in a worse movie, it could be, there's one I'm thinking, well, this is a bad example, but I'm thinking, because it's a great movie, but I'm thinking of Voight and Damon in The Rainmaker.
Yes.
Where Voight thinks, like, it just starts as an air of superiority, and, like, he just never gives Rudy Baylor credit for anything. And I do like that that Duvall recognizes that Travolta is a good lawyer.
Game recognized game.
And yeah, he kind of is, you know, sort of like, it's like in any other circumstance, we could be friends, but I'm kind of like trying to poke you in the ribs the whole time.
Right.
Like I know what buttons to push.
Right.
And I like all that, especially. And then the supporting cast is really good too. Like, you know, you get Gandolfini showing up for a scene or two.
Right.
And everything. Lithgow is really good as
the judge.
Yeah.
William H. Macy is one of the partners.
Oh, yeah.
Shalhoub is one of the partners.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I could do a little bit less, like, dramatic shots of glasses of water and pitches of water, but I guess that's part and parcel for a movie like this.
Yeah.
I also don't like that it's this, you know, Kathy Bates is another one who shows up.
Another
reunion. She shows up at the end as kind of like a bankruptcy judge, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't like how, okay, the last beat of that movie, of the movie, drive me crazy because I kept thinking about, did you ever see The Trip with Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon?
No.
So they have this running joke about like, Richard Gere, what makes him like weird as an actor, but like interesting. They're just like, have you ever noticed that Richard Gere, he always like will take a dramatic beat and then kind of look off to the side as if he's remembering something. And then he'll just chuckle and be like, oh yes. And then he'll start talking. So I was very aware of that in the last moment of Travolta because he's sitting there like thinking.
Right.
But he's not saying anything because, right, like, we know everything that he could possibly say, right, to Kathy Bates. So, right, why repeat it?
Right.
But the whole time I just kept thinking, I'm like, man, Gere would have killed this moment. And then they go straight into like, take me to the river.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And I'm like, this is, yeah, this is like a, as bad of a song choice as like when I watch like Crawl and it ends with like, see you later, alligator. I'm like, this was fucking tense. Like, I don't need see you later, alligator. Right, I don't need this, right, novelty song bullshit.
Right.
So I don't know. But Civil Action is, on the whole, a very good movie.
It is very good.
Yeah.
And really good part for Travolta.
Mm-hmm.
Again, sort of playing into his movie star charm, his movie star, mm-hmm, charisma,
yeah,
flipping it a little, turning it against him by making him, because he's so charismatic, because he's so likable,
mm-hmm,
people resent him because he's gone into personal injury law and,
yeah,
people just write him off as a joke,
yeah,
because he's kind of flashy and people just assume then he doesn't know his shit. And it just, it got me thinking, you know, again, I said I would kill for a movie like this now. They don't make movies like this now.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately that's what happened to his career, right? When we talk about like, so Travolta has this monster 98.
Right.
What happens in the 2000s? He starts, you know, he plays a couple of villain roles. He starts to go DTV. Like, what the heck happened to Travolta? And it's just because they don't make movies for John Travolta anymore.
Yeah. He just picked a lot of bad projects, like, while he was still a star.
Yeah.
And he never did. One of the things that, you know, to talk about Kevin Costner again, he was such a savvy guy from like a career decision standpoint.
Sorry.
He always seemed to like because around Upside of Anger,
yeah,
he's just like, no, I should probably try out a few movies where I'm a supporting player,
right?
I'm kind of the flashy supporting part,
right,
or I'm the co-lead and I let somebody else kind of carry the movie and I'm sort of more the fun character part. And that's something Travolta's never done.
Well, like, he does it in Hairspray, but it's kind of a disaster.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
I like. Yeah, I like, yeah, them. I like the movie Hairspray, the, yeah, musical, but the performance is weird.
Yeah, it's just sometimes he's always an actor who has ideas of like how he wants to play something, but,
yeah,
I just think just sometimes they're not always great ideas for the movies he's in.
Sure.
And yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I hope he has a run where he, like, one of the things that will haunt me forever is, like, I know that he was supposed to be in the running for, like, the Andrew Dice Clay part in Star is Born.
Which he would have crushed.
That's the thing. Like,
yeah,
that's the type of thing where he would have crushed it and he,
yeah,
would have been, like, able to ride a wave of,
right,
that type of role for, like, 5 years.
Yeah.
And people would have been like, oh, man, I remember how good John Travolta was in the right part.
Right.
And then it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
So, but,
yeah,
but I mean, it's hard to, you know, cry too much for him, I guess, in the sense that, like,
sure,
he's had a much more successful career than like 99% of the actors,
right,
has ever been in a movie. So,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I wish, you know, like Nicolas Cage, like, again, people shit on Nicolas Cage for making so many movies.
Mm-hmm.
For me, like, that's a positive because I get more Nicolas Cage movies. I wish Travolta started working that much. If he's going to go the DTV,
yeah,
route, like, fucking do 3 a year. Be Bruce Willis. Like, don't phone it in the way Willis does.
Right.
Don't have zero quality control the way Bruce Willis does.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if you fucking love Bruce Willis, you're living in a golden age because you get a new Bruce Willis movie at a Redbox, like,
yeah,
every other month. I kind of wish Travolta would start cranking them out like that, you know?
I feel like I don't even know if this is like really a thing anymore because of streaming, but like he needs like a network series. Like he needs like to be, you know, the guy who like the lead guy on like a cop show, like a homicide or like a Law and Order type of show. Like I think he would be really good at something like that.
Well, he did that
OJ.
People versus OJ.
Yeah.
He was good on that.
He was very good on that. Yeah. All right. So do you want to end with the Cage or end with the Travolta? Because we got two left.
Well, we can end with the Cage because I think we just did two Travoltas. I'm sorry. We can end with the Travolta.
Okay.
Right? We have one and one?
Yep.
Okay. So the next Cage is Matchstick Men, one of your picks.
Yeah, it's my favorite of the six Cages.
I think it's my favorite of the six as well.
Okay.
It's probably my favorite of the 12.
I would agree with that. Yeah, it's probably my favorite of the 12 too.
Great con man movie, great movie about parents and kids.
Mm-hmm.
Great movie about living with a debilitating disorder.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott, very unconventional movie for Ridley Scott, but just fucking nails it.
Yeah, he's very much in like the Spielberg Catch Me If You Can vein.
Great comparison.
He's like that playful type of aspect.
Yeah. And I tweeted this out last night, but I really feel like Nicolas Cage should have probably won an Oscar for this movie.
Yeah, because in 2003 it was Sean Penn for Mystic River.
God damn it. Then even more so do I think Nicolas Cage should have won an Oscar for this. And this is the kind of movie that only works. I think Alison Lohman is so good in this movie.
Yeah. This is my favorite Lohman.
Yeah. But it only works. And I know she had made movies before this, but like I didn't really know who she was.
Right.
And it only works in that way where it's like you just believe that she's 15 or whatever. And so then the reveal that she's not totally plays.
Mm-hmm.
It still holds up like on repeat viewings, even though you know the twist, even though you know that she's an adult. But the first time I saw it, that twist was like knocked me on my ass.
Yeah. I like how atypical it is.
I keep reaching for the beer and then stopping myself because I'm like, I can't.
I feel like it's a personal victory that I finished like 85% of this, and I will be able to finish this before the end of the show. The thing I really like about Matchstick Men a lot is like it's got so much heart without forfeiting the acidic nature of a con man movie.
Right.
It can play both sides.
Yes.
And I've been rewatching some guy, well, maybe just one, but I rewatched Heist as part of my 2001 run.
Everyone loves money. That's why it's called Money.
It's a good line.
I don't get it, but I like it.
I don't know either. Mammoth got a mammoth. and that's like, you know, a usual con man movie where it's just like you expect the double crosses and things like that. And like with Matchstick Men, I don't know. I got lulled into this story just about him and his daughter. And, like, his quirky partner and everything like that. I remember being very surprised by, like, the twist in it.
Yeah.
And being heartbroken because, like, you want it to be true. You want him to, like, be reconnecting with his long-lost daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it even tougher to watch when he, you know, realizes that something is amiss.
Right.
And then it leads to this epilogue, which I'm not the first person to talk about because I remember Ebert was like over the moon about the epilogue of this movie, and this is another movie he gave 4 stars to.
Rightfully so.
And it's between like what's actually happening and what's unsaid but being said non-verbally, and just kind of the choices that the characters are making where like it could be, you know, fuck you, but it's not.
Right.
And, like, then you understand, and then you see in the next scene, like, why it's not fuck you.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter anymore, and he's in a much better place.
Right.
And that last shot is just, like, it feels like such a victory.
But then they play Take Me to the River.
No, they play The Summer Wind, which is so great.
Yeah.
Every movie should play Take Me to the River. Spider-Man No Way Home is Take Me to the River. The river runs through it, Take Me to the River.
Mystic River.
Mystic River, yeah.
Take
but it's
me
just
to the river. Is there my daughter in there? Put me in the water.
Vampires. They're vampires.
We're doing the Celine Dion, My Heart Will Go On Titanic remix where they add the dialogue into the song.
Yeah, he's like, take me to the river. I'm going to get you, Jimmy. That's a great final shot, too. Yeah. I like the little pantomime that Bacon does. Oh,
Bacon
man,
rules
Bacon's
in that
good.
Movie.
Bacon's the MVP of that movie.
100%.
Yeah, I like Marcia Gay Harden in that movie, too.
This
is the
good.
Mystic River podcast, though.
It makes sense that Bacon was the one person not nominated for an Oscar for
sure,
that movie.
Sure, because I don't understand, like, maybe I don't understand acting, because that's, like,
I definitely don't.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, yeah, so Mastic Men is just, every time I watch it, it's a great movie.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Wonderful.
I love it.
Wonderful
looks,
movie.
It looks great. It's
yeah.
like a great L.A. kind of surfacey movie.
Yeah. I think that if somebody came up to me and said, Adam, we're going to betray you, but it's going to be a quadrangle of Alison Lohman, Sam Rockwell, Bruce McGill, and Bruce Altman, I would have been like, that sounds fun. I'm like, I'm on board. I'm like, at least you got a good crew.
Yeah, it was, as I was watching it last night, I was like, oh, right, Bruce McGill is, like, in on it.
Yeah.
Like, it's this is all for show.
Yeah. I love all this stuff where it's just, like, where he's learning just kind of how to relate to having a daughter.
Yeah.
And he's just like, why do they always smell like gum? This is, like, these little, like, observations.
It's a great, great movie.
Yeah. I wish she wasn't with Fran Kranz at the end because I don't like Fran Kranz, but that's a nitpick.
And again, it's really lovely, like you saying, like I we want it to be true, you
yeah.
know, we want that's the unspoken subtext of their scene at the end, you know, that
yeah.
they both wish it was true also, and it can't be. But
I had so there's a whole like running motif of like Nicolas Cage going to the grocery store only buying tuna. And, like, there's this...
Carton cigarettes.
Cartons of cigarettes. And, like, there's a cashier who's a woman of around his age who's, like, really pretty and stuff, but he's, like, never talking to her and everything like that. And every time I saw that this time when I rewatched it, I was just like, I should really stop doing self-checkout. Like, I gotta find my cashier.
Sheila Kelly, baby.
Yeah. All right. So
all right, before
one.
We do the last one, last gift.
Oh, boy.
One more gift.
Okay. Here a stocking with my name on it.
It just has an A.
Well, my name is A. Martinez. My name is A. Martinez.
A. Martinez from yeah. the Chucky movie.
Yeah. Deep Blu-rays of Bones and Body Parts. I got to do a Friday night double feature of these two. Thanks so much.
Sure thing.
This is great. I feel bad only giving you two shirts.
No, please.
Oh,
the shirts rule.
I'm flattered. Thank you so much.
Happy holidays.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you, too.
Thank you.
And to everybody listening. And thank you for sticking with us. Are we at 3 hours?
2:41.
All right, we'll make it. We'll make it to three.
We're going
to
do 20 minutes on this movie?
No, we'll riff after after that. I don't know if we've ever had a show that's 3 hours.
I mean, our 400th was like 4 hours long.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't want to go to 4 hours.
No.
Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe no.
Yeah. I can't. NC-17 would be 17-hour marathon. We should do like a telethon. All like
right.
that. We should do like a Magnolia Tree thing.
Okay.
But then it's
but
just like
talk
every
about NC-17
hour.
Movies?
Yeah, we'll find 17 NC-17 movies, and then every hour we just have a show about another NC-17 movie.
I just watched something that was NC-17. It was an Almodovar movie. Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down.
How is it?
It's great.
I should watch
There's
it.
There's no reason for it to be NC-17. I think it's on HBO Max.
Can I say something that's a movie shame?
Yeah.
I've never seen an Pedro Almodovar
movie. I haven't seen enough of them.
Yeah.
I've seen probably six.
I always feel like, well, he's so far in. Like, where do I start?
Right, I should start.
I should start.
Yeah. Start with something like Volver.
Yeah.
Because Penelope Cruz should have won an Oscar for that. Speaking of movies where people should have won Oscars.
Yeah. Oh, you think so? For this one?
No.
Oh, for the next one?
Mystic River. When
oh,
we're
for
talking
Mystic
about.
River. Okay.
Or Nicolas Cage
okay.
should have won for Matchstick Men. Kevin Bacon should have won for Mystic River.
Yeah.
No, I don't think this next one should
yeah.
have won an Oscar, even though I like it.
I like it, too. I think of the Travoltas, this is probably my favorite.
Okay.
Except, or no, Punisher. This is my favorite. This is my second favorite. I like how I went from like, oh, okay, into like, what? This is such an Adam answer. Okay. Yeah. Punisher is the best movie.
I would probably say Civil Action.
Okay. Civil Action would be like three for
okay.
me.
Okay. Civil Action, by the way, one of the two that I don't own. Civil okay. Action and Phenomenon. And The Experts. I'm sorry.
I bought Civil Action and Phenomenon from Half Price Books for $2 each. And I was so happy that I had
the right
them.
Call. Yeah.
I bought those. And I found like a stack of movies that I bought from Half Price Books in the trunk of my car today. And I'm just like, I was so.
Anything good?
I was so apathetic about my purchases. I didn't even bring them inside. I've had like a DVD of Class Action with Gene Hackman and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio in there.
We were just talking about her last night because we were watching Consenting Adults. What's your opinion on her?
Scarface, good.
Okay.
The Abyss, good.
Yeah.
Robin Hood, sure.
Sure. Would.
I mean, it's a bad role for any woman.
Right.
But,
right.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
Okay.
It's not somebody I ever think about, like, being a fan of, but yeah, I like her when she's in movies.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. She's like... rich man's who am I gonna put down she's like rich man Ann Archer.
All right, I'll take it.
Yeah, I just like to take Ann Archer down a peg or
she
two
needs to be taken down
whenever
a peg.
I get the chance,
right?
Enough, Ann.
She's the put upon wife in both Fatal Attraction and Body of Evidence.
She is. Yeah I have Presumed Innocent on my watch list on HBO Max.
She's the put-upon wife in
that
one, too?
The put-upon wife, yeah.
She is?
Or no.
She's
not. That's
Bonnie Bedelia.
I'm thinking of Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger.
Got
she's
it.
The wife,
yeah.
Anyways. All right, so our last movie is
Have you ever seen Presumed Innocent?
No.
Okay.
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I haven't seen like that or Frantic or there's like a few.
I just saw Frantic for the first time like a year ago.
Okay. There's like a few Fords I need to catch up on.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, our last movie is Primary Colors written
on
by
the 12th
Elaine
day
May.
Of Christmas.
On the 12th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a slightly veiled movie
right.
about Bill and Hillary Clinton
while he was still president.
Yeah, did you hear that? So Clinton liked the movie
okay.
and said that he thought Travolta was great.
It was good.
But he invited him to a party on the stipulation that he come in character, and Travolta said no.
Thank you, John Travolta, for having dignity.
Yeah, exactly. So I think this is like another case like Weatherman, or there was something else I watched like right around this time. Or Civil Action, where like it makes you just despair for any type of justice in the justice system.
Yes.
This makes you despair for just any type of like even the quote unquote good politicians are
right.
just there's a lot of mud on them on the way to getting to the good. And
yep.
I think it's good in the sense that it trades on the likability of Travolta and allows him to be dark in a lot of ways too.
Do you think he needed to be doing a Clinton impression?
Well, that's what the book is about, though.
I know.
Yeah.
But part of me wishes I could just watch this movie and have him be more John Travolta and less Bill Clinton. I know the book is about Bill Clinton, but like...
Yeah. I think I like it in the sense that Travolta a lot of times trades on his kind of iconography.
Yeah.
And this is him playing a character. So
yeah.
I think it's interesting that he's not really... doing a lot of the John Travolta stuff.
Okay.
He's just playing it as I'm Bill Clinton. This is how Bill Clinton is.
Okay.
And I think the movie's got, it's another movie like Civil Action where it's just a lot of individual scenes that really work because what the people are saying in it is intelligent and,
yes.
and, insightful and dark and interesting. I think there's a few things in it that I'm not crazy about. Like Kathy Bates, I figured out a little while ago, she's like one of my favorite actors too.
Oh, okay, cool.
I just really like whenever she shows up in anything, like whether it's Joe from Saber in The Office or like Richard Jewell or
right,
Primary
right,
Colors
right.
or something like that.
The Waterboy, you know.
The Waterboy, Misery.
Sure.
The Waterboy, she's good at.
She is.
Yeah.
I'm not
yeah.
putting her down as much as the
sure.
Waterboy.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that she's got the Oscar written parts where she's very much like kind of grandstanding the movie
okay.
by purpose, but I think like her character's interesting enough.
Yeah.
And I
like
her.
The idea of like
yeah.
somebody who kind of cleans up messes or digs up dirt or like that's kind of interesting. I spoilers for Primary Colors coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I just her suicide just rings so false to me every time I watch it.
Yeah, yeah, I would say that.
And I know that they try and establish a history of mental illness and that she's been in and out of facilities and like it's not that it comes out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it just feels like a forced, false, dramatic note because the movie needs one here.
Yeah, it's more like to give Adrian Lester's character like some third act agency than it is about her. And I think also just from even though she's been said to be in and out of facilities for 2 decades, she's such a strong personality and such like a brave person and everything like that. Like I especially don't think she would like give up over the span of like one night. Like even if she was heartbroken by like what they're doing. And I don't like it, especially if it's like she did this in some sort of like Life of David Gale way to like teach them a lesson. God.
Life of David Gale.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is going 3 hours. We got to cram in Life of David Gale.
We got to bring it up.
Yeah. So I don't know about that. This is another movie where, like, I saw it way too young. I saw it when I was, like, 16, and I just didn't get a lot of the nuances of it. And it's gotten better as I've watched it over the years. And I remember thinking, like, Adrian Lester was going to be, like, a big star. And this was going to be, like, the movie, his jumping off point.
Okay.
And I just never really saw him in anything after
No,
this.
I can't think of it. I looked him up.
Yeah.
He's done a ton of, like, British TV.
Okay.
I can't think of many other American movies he's done except for the Kenneth Branagh Love's Labor Lost, maybe, with Matthew Lillard and Alicia Silverstone.
Is that the Nivola one?
Maybe.
Okay.
I think.
What do you take of the ending, like the final shot with him shaking the procession of hands and stuff? And then he gives Adrian Lester, like, the double handshake.
Right.
And at the beginning, Paul Guilfoyle basically says, like, you know, if he's – it's almost like the less personal one.
Right.
But, like, they're so, you know, intricately tied at that point.
Right.
Like, is it just kind of, like, an extra, like, kind of twist that, like, I don't really think of you in any type of closeness way?
I don't think it's meant to be less personal so much as it is insincere.
Okay.
And it's a reminder just that it's all for show. It's all insincerity, even though he spent so much time and even though Adrian Lester has believed in him so much, he's still a professional politician and looking to get elected and succeeded, you know?
Yeah.
And so... yeah, I wish a little bit of me wishes it was a little less closely tied with the Clintons.
Sure.
And was just about politics in general, because I think Mike Nichols can make a really smart movie about our political process.
Yeah.
But I even think, you know, I think it goes off the rails a little bit in the third act. Some of the Larry Hagman stuff I think is really interesting in terms of like...
He's another Sidney Pollack type where whenever he shows up in something, I'm just like, oh, this is going to get good
for
a while.
What was Sidney Pollack? Civil Action.
Civil Action. Yeah. And I've got one for 2K Replay next year that I'm going to write about that I'm like, I love that Sidney Pollack murders in, and that's Changing Lanes.
I haven't seen it in so long.
He is so good in Changing Lanes.
Is he like the father-in-law?
He's Amanda Pete's dad. Yeah.
Okay.
And he's kind of the guy who runs the law office that Ben Affleck is sort of like a junior partner at.
Okay. I don't think I've seen that movie since the theater.
It's another like Eyes Wide Shut thing where it's just like, let me tell you how it really fucking is. And it's just like, oh man.
Sidney Pollack rules as an actor. I don't love his resume as a director.
No.
He has a lot of movies I like and then a lot of movies I'm just like, meh.
Yeah.
But man, as an actor, he rules.
Yes, yeah. Especially like during that little brief period in the late 90s, early 2000s, he just was the guy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But I wonder, one person whose opinion I really would love to hear on Primary Colors is Winona Ryder.
Okay.
Because there's so many like throwaway lines where it's just like, I want to fuck that girl because she looks like Winona Ryder. Like, that's like her character.
Right.
And I just find that so fascinating because it's like Billy Bob Thornton and Kathy Bates both are just like, who's the Winona Ryder looking
woman? Right.
Yeah.
And that's Stacey, what's her name, right?
She was, I know
from,
she was
in the Company of Men.
Yeah, and she was in Superbad. She was like Michael
Cera's
mom.
She's the mom. Yeah. But I remember her from In the Company of Men.
She looks like Kimberly Williams a little bit.
With like a pixie haircut.
Yeah.
Rob
would like it because of her hair. So, yeah. But Primary Colors is another movie where, like, I was looking at the awards that it was nominated for and stuff. And I wonder if, like, it got pushed to later in 98 because it came out in March. If this would have been, like, another nomination for Travolta. Because I'm surprised, like, because he was only nominated for Saturday Night Fever and Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And I would have thought, like, somewhere in that late 90s run, he would have picked up, like, one for whether it's Get Shorty or Civil
He should have been nominated for Get Shorty.
Primary Colors, yeah.
Comedies rarely get nominated.
Right, yeah.
Unless it's a supporting role.
Correct.
You rarely get nominated for leads in comedies. But Get Shorty, he totally should have been nominated for because he fucking rules in that movie.
Yeah. Good
12
stuff.
Days of Travolta Cage.
Mm-hmm. Everybody should do it.
I agree. This was actually super
fun.
It was hard to watch 12 movies, like to find the time to watch 12 movies.
Yeah.
But never felt like work. It was like super enjoyable and made me very nostalgic for when movies like this got made.
I agree. And like it was nice also because these are, I somehow find. Like, I kind of lose my way in the middle of these guys' filmography sometimes where I'm like, I'm watching their classics or I'm watching what's new. And I don't get the, unless I make an excuse to get an opportunity to, like, I want to rewatch Matchstick Men or I want to rewatch Primary Colors and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch more in their filmographies we can continue to revisit. Because even just throwing out titles during this show, I'm like, oh, yeah, we could totally do this again or do something similar, even if it was only two of each or, you know, Friday Night Double Features.
We could also do a version of this with Russell and Costner.
Yeah, I don't think I would have as much fun with that.
You don't think so?
No.
Okay.
We could try.
You don't have
to. With our number twos, but I don't know if I would enjoy it as much.
I feel like our North Star is always going to be Travolta Cage. Yeah. So, like, even if we did Costner Russell, we would be like, we should have just done another Travolta Cage episode.
Because I'm not necessarily going to like any movie just because Kurt Russell is in it. Like, I'm not going to love The Mean Season just because Kurt Russell is in it.
What about Crypto?
Crypto, I might.
Okay.
But almost any movie that Nicolas Cage is in, I'm going to enjoy. You know? I don't know.
I like it. I don't know either.
All right. This computer is about to run out of battery.
Oh, boy.
So we're not going to make 3 hours.
All right. So real quick, I got some holiday shout-outs.
Okay.
All right. Do you think we have time for this?
I honestly don't know, but try it.
Okay.
I never thought that it would run out of battery, but it might.
Okay. Happy holidays to Mummy Kid, IT Loves by Claire Forlani and the team at Skullbox, The Water from Mirrors, but be careful, it creates reflections. Merry Christmas to The Crow City of Angels, a movie that taught me 1 crow sorrow, 2 crows joy, 3 crows a letter, 4 crows a boy, 5 crows silver, 6 crows gold, 7 crows a secret never to be told. And finally, John Gotti, we're never going to see another guy like him, even if we live to be 5,000. It ain't the titles that honor men, it's the men that honor titles. The boss is the boss is the boss.
Thank you so much, Adam. This was a blast.
Thank you.
Happy holidays,
happy
everyone.
Holidays.
We love you. We'll be back next week with our overrated, underrated show. And then the following week, it's our best of the year episode.
Woohoo! Turn the page.
Take us out, Bobby.
Oi, did you meet my son, the genius? He has more in his head than in his pockets.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.